Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is June 29th, 2014.
Woo! Gay Pride! Woo! Woo!
Oh god, put your shirt down. There are no fucking beads on offer.
Don't be jealous of my body!
And this is episode 57, Amateur Mario Cartography. Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
And we want to start this episode off really briefly dedicating this episode to Satoru Iwata. You may or may not have heard that the reason why Iwata missed out on E3 a few weeks ago has been revealed. It turns out that he had a growth of some kind in his bile duct.
That sounds nasty.
Yeah, well, apparently it wasn't cancerous, or at least it doesn't appear to have been, but they did go in and remove it. This was a fairly major surgery. He's not even back to regular office hours yet. He's simply working via email now. But he is recovering. You know, they said that at Nintendo that he's looking better. He is, you know, again, like I said, working via email. So hopefully he's going to get better. We love that guy. We want him to get better. So we here at the SS Game Buoy are sending our thoughts to you.
I was going to say get well soon in Japanese, but I don't know how to.
So let's get this show started with our regular follow-ups and news bits. First up, we have a follow-up to something we talked about a while back, like 40 seconds ago, maybe.
Oh, you mean me flashing my titties?
Oh, ew, ain't nobody flashing back to that. On Friday, Nintendo held their 74th annual general meeting of shareholders. This is, of course, where the company's shareholders vote on, you know, Nintendo's board of directors and what have you. Unfortunately, Satoru Iwata was not able to attend, but he was reelected alongside other former members of the board for another term in their positions.
Oh, good.
So Iwata's job is secured for another term, and, you know, we're, you know, hopefully going to see a whole lot of him in the next year. Slagkick, I think you had one that you specifically wanted to talk about?
Yes, following up on the Women in Gaming story that's kind of been developing, which shouldn't even have to be a story, the results from the 2014 International Game Developers Association Developer Satisfaction Survey have been revealed, and since 2009, the amount of women in the gaming industry is now up to 22% from 11.5% 5 years ago. So it's still very heavily dominated by men, so...
You know, this seems like a glass half empty, glass half full situation. It definitely sucks that men still completely dominate the industry, but that is a pretty remarkable growth of the female segment of worker in the industry. So... You know, that's good, and, you know, hopefully this curve will continue, you know, hopefully this upward climb will keep going.
Another interesting little tidbit is that 2% of the industry consists of transgender or otherwise other identifying persons, which is, of course, very small, and we'd like to see that number bigger, but, I mean, that's still in the larger industry. It's good to see that that's not, like, a minuscule less than percent, so...
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, we also have here a follow-up from a few weeks ago. You know, we were talking about some games that were never released, were canceled. One of the games we talked about was Primal Rage 2. You may recall we had discussed how there were a few surviving machines, you know, full cabinets and arcade boards running this software. One of them has been found and is now available for play by the general public at the Galloping Ghost Arcade in Brookfield, Illinois.
Oh man, we're going to have to get our friends at Koopa Club to check that out.
Yeah, I seriously have already messaged a couple of them telling them that they need to go get cell phone footage for me. I'm really eager to hear about how this game really plays, and I think it's really, really neat that this arcade has, you know, found this machine and is letting people play it. Like, it's not just sitting getting all dusty in someone's basement. Ooh, I'm a collector. Don't touch it. I need it to be, you know, free of wear and tear. So this is just stupendous. We also have here news that Forza Horizon 2, the Xbox One and 360 game that'll be coming out this October, is on each platform a completely different game.
What?
Basically, Forza Horizon 2 on Xbox One is going to be using the same game engine as Forza 5, and Forza Horizon 2 on Xbox 360 will be using the Forza Horizon game engine. So basically, they'll have both have the Forza Horizon 2 world sort of, you know, in the game, each individual game, and, you know, the feature set will basically be based on what the feature set of the engine that they're running is. So for the Xbox One version, you're going to have all of the feature set of Forza 5, all of the drivatars, the weather stuff, and the Xbox 360 version is going to be, you know, the basically Forza Horizon with the Forza Horizon 2 map.
Interesting.
So this is a really interesting way to do a sort of cross-gen sequel, I think. I'm really excited for this game. I know some people who are saying that they were, I don't have to get an Xbox One now because I only really want Horizon 2. I'll just get that on 360. Well, be aware, what you're going to get there is basically a Forza Horizon 1 map pack of the Forza Horizon 2 map.
Oops.
So, yeah, that's something, all right. We also have here word that after their removal some number of months back, Fallout, Fallout 2, and Fallout Tactics are available on Steam once again.
That's great news.
That really is. Psychic?
Two more characters have been revealed for Hyrule Warriors, and one of them is brand new to the franchise. One character returning from Twilight Princess is Agatha. If you are a fan of her, then you're probably excited. And there is a new character called Lana, not Lana Del Rey, but this character Lana is the White Witch.
Video games.
See, I was hoping if there was a White Witch, it would be Stevie Nicks, but I guess that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So that's really exciting, and you know, I was reading somewhere, it was either, you know, the folks over at Koopa Club or somewhere on a comment thread on Joystick or something, but the majority of the playable characters, if not all but Link, have been revealed as female so far. I'm trying to think if there are any other male playable characters yet.
None announced or confirmed as far as I know, but there are some that have been sort of speculated. We've seen in screenshots, like, oh, that's probably a playable character. Characters like Zant.
Yeah.
So, you know, there probably are going to be a couple of males added, but I think we're going to see a primarily female cast in this game.
How cool is that?
How cool is that?
Right? I mean,
it's very cool. It's pretty cool. We also have here word that Rise of Mana, you may recall this is the mobile, but possibly not social, sequel to the Seiken Densetsu franchise by Square Enix, is finally going to be released on Android, this week. So in Japan, this is now out. There has not yet been any announcement made as far as localization, but I'm sure if it's a popular product, we'll see it get brought over.
Falcom has another Legend of Heroes game coming in 2015, and so yeah, they're kicking off with the popularity of, you know, the franchise that has been kind of growing in interest over the past couple years.
Yeah, both in Japan and in other territories, so that's really exciting. We also have news here that the infamous First Light standalone expansion will be available on August 26th. This is going to be available for purchase for $15 on the PlayStation Store, and it's one of the first PS4 games that is available on PSN as a, preload.
Cool.
Yeah. We also have here Rezogun Heroes DLC came out this week, and we also got news from Nintendo that Splatoon is going to offer 2 Squid local multiplayer.
Yay!
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so, you know, so not only will you be able to play with 8 Squid multiplayer online action, you know, 4v4, but you'll also be able to play a single-player mode and a one-on-one multiplayer mode without having to connect to the internet. So, for those of you who are maybe a little hesitant to jump into the online shooter arena sort of thing, or just want to have some fun with your local friend. I mean, I know that Captain Spike and I will be playing locally as well.
Damn right.
As well as online with friends. So that's really cool. I mean, this is really turning into a fully-fledged shooter game.
Indeed. You may recall the Kickstarter phenomenon that was the Banner Saga some number of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
We now have here news that the Banner Saga is headed to iPad, Android, and Windows tablet devices this summer.
Yeah.
This has been announced by publisher Versus Evil, and it's going to feature a redesigned control scheme suited to take advantage of the unique benefits of touchscreens for strategy games.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And last, but certainly not least, Curse of Naxxramas for Hearthstone. This is, of course, the Naxxramas-based Raid expansion has been confirmed to be releasing in July.
Yes, we'll be getting more details on July 1st, so we'll have a follow-up for the follow-up.
Excellent, that's tomorrow.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the day after tomorrow.
Yeah, but maybe by the time people are listening to this.
By the time we get this published, it'll be like, that was yesterday.
Oh well.
Oops, boops.
I guess it's time for...
Oh my god.
News. News. Oh my god, news. So, Captain Spike, you've just been dying to tell us about this one all week.
You know, I actually really have. We got a surprise announcement this week of a new action game by Platinum Games.
Whoop.
And, you know, this is going to sound like a bad thing, but it's a licensed property being published by Activision based on the Nickelodeon series The Legend of Korra.
Yes!
Like, that's amazing! Are you kidding me? You know, this is the kind of thing where when people say, like, oh, if they were to make an Avatar slash Legend of Korra video game, who would your dream developer be? And this is the kind of thing that posts like this on the internet. People are often like, oh, man, I'd love to have a Platinum Games character action game, Bayonetta style, based on Legend of Korra or Avatar. Well, that's basically exactly what's happening.
Yes.
There was apparently a press event about this game about a week ago that was embargoed until the day they made the announcement. So members of the press have already seen this game in action. And they've basically said that it looks like sort of a mix of Bayonetta and Metal Gear Rising, but with like timing windows a little looser so that, you know, some of the parry timings in particular in Revengeance were really, really, really hard.
Well, I mean, this is being aimed to a audience. Including children.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I think it's perfect. You know, they're definitely taking into account that, you know, some kids are going to be playing this. This is probably going to be, like, the best possible introduction to character action games.
Yeah.
And, you know, Platinum Games, they've talked about quite specifically several times that, you know, this is going to be a downloadable game, and so there are certain expectations as far as content that they are familiar with, and they are doing everything in their power to pack this downloadable content with so much content that they think that fans will be very happy and very surprised just how big this game is.
Yeah, and that's due out this year, right?
That is due out this year. It's going to be coming out on PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, Xbox One, Xbox 360, and PC this fall.
So no Wii U.
No Wii U. You almost have to wonder if that's Activision not wanting to compete with Platinum Games as Bayonetta.
Yep.
I'll just be buying both of them.
Yep.
So that's really exciting. Slaggy, what else do we have?
Well, talking about Versus Evil, the Banner Saga folks, they're going to be releasing an Afro Samurai game.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's being developed for PC and next-gen consoles, a third-person action-adventure game with an original storyline, new characters, and improved special moves.
We also have here news that Yoshitaka Murayama, you may be familiar with this gentleman as the creator behind Suikoden, is working on a new RPG project targeted towards Western audiences.
Oh, wow.
We don't really have a whole lot more information other basically than, you know, he kind of left Konami and is sort of looking at doing sort of, it sounds like spiritual successors to Suikoden, but I don't think we can say that quite yet.
Yeah.
But this is definitely something to keep your eyes open on and sort of see how this goes.
So in an interesting tidbit of news that we usually probably wouldn't cover, a Forrest Gump Endless Runner is making its way to mobile platforms. Yes, you heard that right. Based on the famous movie, which was based on a book, starring Tom Hanks, you will be able to run as Forrest in Run, Forrest, Run. This is not a parody post. This is not an April Fool's joke. This is an actual game that is coming, and it's currently being tested in New Zealand.
Yeah, this is licensed by Paramount. It's being published by like a real serious mobile games publisher. This is a real game that's happening. This is Forrest Gump the Endless Runner. Run, Forrest, Run.
In other news, Civilization Revolution 2 has been announced. So kind of coming hot on the heels of the announcement earlier this year of Civilization Beyond Earth, Civ Rev 2 is coming for iOS. And it's actually going to be playable starting on July 2nd, so probably by the time you hear this. It'll be coming soon to Android devices. No word on whether it's going to be coming to consoles like the original Civ Rev. But, you know, this is kind of Sid Meier's baby these days. He's a lot more hands-on with this than he is with the mainline Civ series, so.
You know, something that I think is really noteworthy is that last week, Resogun had free DLC. This DLC did two different things. The first was adding a new local co-op mode, and the second is a really cool ship editor, where basically you get to build your own ship.
Oh my god, we should make the SS game buoy.
Yes, we should. I have seen such interesting things as flying penises, flying Marios, flying keyboard penises. Cats, Pop-Tart cats, I'm sorry, Nyan cat, you know, all kinds of things, characters from other games. Flappy Bird is a really popular one. You know, people are just going crazy with this tool. It's
you know,
a really
you say,
cool
you say
tool.
Flying penises, and I just think Choaniki.
Yeah, I wanted to make a flying Choaniki bro.
A bro? Don't you mean like a muscle stud?
Well, obviously.
I don't think they're very bro-ish. I think they're very like, oh, a fabulous hunk.
I can't even with you.
We could have a discussion here about how muscle men are portrayed in Japanese media.
So there's a new LEGO online game called LEGO Minifigures Online.
It's basically Diablo.
Yeah, this game appears to just be, you know, Diablo with a significantly lower barrier for skill barrier for entry. We also have news that Bandai Namco has the license to Godzilla and are working on a PlayStation 3 game based on Sane.
That's cool.
As far as I can tell, this is going to be based on actual real Japanese Godzilla, not American movie Godzilla. And apparently we're going to hear more about it later this year.
That's exciting. That's a good company for the license to go to. Metro Redux is coming on August 26th to North America and Europe on August 29th. It is described as a true director's cut of Metro 2033 and Metro Last Light. It's going to be available for PS4, Xbox One, and PC. You can either get it as a boxed compilation for $50 or individual downloads at $25 a pop. Also expect Linux and SteamOS versions coming later this year.
The surprisingly fun Zombie Driver, you may recall, this game from 2012 when it sort of stealth-launched on PC and consoles, is now available on Xbox One. This came out last week in a new quote-unquote Ultimate Edition. It's available for $15 as a download, and apparently it's actually locked, the gameplay is locked at 60 frames a second.
60 frames a second, 1080p?
And since the game ran really poorly on previous gen consoles when it released, this is great news.
It's everything, the new lease on life that it needed.
Everything I've read indicates that the game's real strong gameplay comes through in this new release quite well.
That's great. Jonathan Nordhagen, who is the programmer behind Gone Home, has branched out to form his new studio, Dim Bulb Games. It is an independent studio based in San Francisco, and we are excited to see what he has to offer. You know, he did Gone Home, he also did some DLC for Bioshock 2, so we expect great things from him, and he's local. I'm sure that it was an amicable split from Fulbright, but you know, hopefully both will go on to do great things.
Excellent, excellent. We have here news that Dreamfall Chapters, this is of course the planned full retail title release of what was previously planned as a series of episodic games in the Dreamfall universe. This was kickstarted, we talked about it a long, long, long time ago. Apparently due to development troubles, is now being split up and released in episodes as originally planned.
Really will be Dreamfall Chapters.
The first chapter, that is Dreamfall Chapters Book 1 Reborn, is planned to be released this autumn for PC, Mac, and Linux, and all Kickstarter and PayPal backers will be receiving all of the episodes free of charge. Like, you won't have to buy them or pay individually per chapter. Like, no, if you Kickstarted it, even though now it's going to be 5 games, you're still going to get the whole thing. So,
well, good
I think,
for them.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think that's very good. Slag, if you'd like to take this next one.
You'll have to correct me if I'm saying it wrong. R No Surge is going to be coming to the U.S., according to Tecmo Koei. I always want to call them Temco, like Namco. It was also confirmed for a European release on September 26th. We don't yet have a date for the American release.
Excellent. And the last thing we have here for you on the news docket this week is news that Hironobu Sakaguchi's studio Mistwalker has trademarked the name Terra Battle.
Well, the name for a game, presumably.
Presumably, but I mean, strictly speaking, we don't know that. What we know is that they trademarked the name. We do know that next week in France is the Japan Expo, and that Sakaguchi has said he would be talking about his next game project there.
Hmm.
So presumably it is Terra Battle.
Presumably.
But we don't know yet. We'll have more on that for you next week.
Now, they've been pretty heavy into the mobile social sphere, haven't they?
You know, they have, since none of their console JRPGs have really landed as hard as I think everyone expected them to. Which is a real shame, all of those games. Blue Dragon, The Last Story, and most particularly, Lost Odyssey.
Yeah.
That was an incredible game. So, these games should have been hits. They weren't. Mistwalker didn't do super well, but then they were making mobile games, and I think they've been doing all right in that scene. So, fingers crossed, hopefully this next game will be their return to RPGs.
Yeah, let's hope.
And yeah, because I have to tell you, it hurts my heart to think that Sakaguchi-san is making mobile social games.
Well, look at the current sphere.
Yep.
Welcome to Mobile Social Buoy, your port of call for mobile social games. Using the code MailBuoy will get you 3 extra coins in the new Sakaguchi mobile social game.
Speak of the devil.
Doom and gloom.
Doom and gloom.
So, you're going to have to forgive us because this is us talking about a rumor posted at Kotaku.
Oops.
But, you know, this report has been corroborated on every corner of the internet. It's just that Kotaku was the first major source where I saw someone talking about it, and I really wanted to give credit where it's due. Apparently, Kotaku reached out to employees to confirm. Basically, what's going on here is that the rumor goes that Crytek is canceling projects, like, left and right. They're sort of having sort of those first things that you hear about when studios close.
Mm-hmm.
Starting to see those things happen. Employees are getting checks that bounce when they try to deposit them or cash them. You know, they're getting, like, bonuses not coming in or coming in substantially late. And according to sort of the scuttlebutt of what employees have said, even things like, oh, groundskeepers not getting paid, or like, you know, local food vendors not getting their tabs paid off.
Yikes.
A lot of the things that we hear happening to studios that went bankrupt, we're hearing maybe happening in Crytek's offices worldwide right now.
Yeah.
So, it's scary as hell. Hopefully, you know, this is all rumor and some unhappy employees trying to paint the company in a bad name. But when you see every site reporting that they have sources confirming this, it starts to get real scary out there.
Yeah, I mean, and they don't have Far Cry anymore. Apparently, there's some rumors bubbling about that they won't have rights to the Rise, or they won't be working on the next Rise game if there is one, so.
Yeah, and you know, this is scary because Crytek employs something like 800 people, so if Crytek goes under, that's gonna be a lot of talent out on the streets, and that's really, really awful to think about.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously our hearts and thoughts go out with you guys. Hopefully, again, these are malicious fake rumors and y'all are still doing good as ever.
Yeah, cause I mean, Crytek's one of the names you really hear when pushing the envelope graphically.
Oh, definitely.
PC and,
definitely.
You know, uses benchmarks a lot. Crysis, etc.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, they have such far-reaching implications, as even things like Monster Hunter Online, the gung-ho Capcom collaboration, uses CryEngine
3. Oh, does it use CryEngine?
Uh-huh. So, and we talked about that here on the show some number of months ago. So there's a lot of sort of like, oh, snap things about this if this turns out true. I don't want to spend too much time on this anymore because maybe it's all a lie. Hopefully it's all a lie. But this is what we're hearing is happening out there, and we wanted to report it to you guys. So with that having been said, let's move on to happier things and get to our discussion for this week. All right, so we are going to talk today about Super Mario Kart as a series. Then we're going to talk about some of our favorite non-Mario Kart kart games.
Non-Mario Kart kart games.
And just some generally infamous non-Mario Kart kart games.
Which means some bad ones, I presume.
Oh, yeah.
We got to talk about the stinkers.
Oh, we sure do. So, you know, I want to get this started. Let's talk about the Mario Kart series, because obviously, you know, these games spawned an entire subgenre of racing. They're certainly directly, like, responsible for Mario branching out into non-platforming games.
That's true. I guess aside from things like Mario's appearance in the original golf.
Again, we're talking about Mario's appearance and stuff like that, and he appeared as the ref in the NES Punch-Out. But, I mean, as far as straight-up Super Mario Blank.
Yeah.
And having, you know, Mario Golf, Mario Tennis, Mario
Party.
Party, yeah, that's a good one. This was sort of the start of that, though. This was, of course, back in 1992 for the Nintendo. Yeah, right, that makes me feel old. It was directed by Hideki Kono and Tadashi Sugiyama, produced, of course, by Miyamoto-san. The music was composed by Soyo Oka, and this is available on the Virtual Console for the Wii, and available for the Virtual Console for the Wii U in every region other than North America.
Oh, man.
In fact, in Europe, they had a promotion where if you bought Super Mario Kart when it went up, you would get $5 off on the, or £5 or whatever off on the digital version of Kart 8.
5 euros?
Euros, maybe. Okay.
Euros and pounds.
The way you said euros in that first one, it sounded like euros, like Mediterranean wraps. I was like, oh girl, I want some falafel right now though.
Ooh.
Anyway though, you know, this is, this game went on to be the third best-selling Super Nintendo game of all time.
Wow, yeah.
At, you know, the 9 million units mark. And it's funny, you know, within the context of Mario Kart, 9 million is like, oh, that's not that many.
It's pretty big deal.
But, you know, certainly at the time, Super Mario Kart was sort of a big change from other racing games.
Oh, yeah, it really was.
You know, it used the Super Nintendo's Mode 7 graphics effects to great effect to sort of rotate the entire track around you as you're turning, create a really great illusion of movement that way. But what's really sort of notable is the way that it handled speed and acceleration, you know, sort of off-road obstacles, certainly, and most importantly, the items.
Yeah.
I think that if you asked anyone, sort of about what they thought the defining difference between Mario Kart and, let's say, Forza 5 is, they'd probably say blue shells and shit. Right?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm really glad you brought up the point that it kind of spawned this whole new franchise, not really, a franchise and a subgenre, because racing games were really a different thing. And I mean, coming from the late 80s, early 90s sort of perspective, we were looking at things like Pole Position and, you know, some of the arcade games. So we were really
stuff like, you know, Iron Man, Ivan Stewart, Off-Road, Road Blasters, you know, some of those are arcade Atari classics. But this was a different beast. Like, this was not just Road Blasters, for example, had, like, a gimmick where you could get, like, some missiles or something. But it was super basic. Like, this was, like, straight up, there's an assortment of items. They are going to directly impact your race in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah, fantasy-themed tracks.
There's a total, like, strategy to, like, what item you get and how you're going to use it. Like, oh, I just got this feather. Am I going to use it to jump over a red shell?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to use it to jump over a wall and take a shortcut?
An oil puddle.
An oil puddle, yeah. A gap in the Boo House track.
Oh, my God, the Boo House tracks.
And that was another thing, is the way they leveraged all of these sort of Nintendo, all of these
Mario
environments into track themes was really great and really well done.
And I think by not placing an emphasis on realism, and I mean, we really, you know, this is not an episode about racing games in the larger scheme, but when you think of things like Forza or you think of things like Gran Turismo, like, we don't put them in the same category as Mario Kart because they are not the same type of game.
Yeah, you know, something that's notable about the design of Mario Kart is that it was initially sort of born out of Miyamoto-san's desire to have an F-Zero style racing game that was two-player simultaneous play.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, that was sort of a big part of the art assets and everything, was that they didn't feel that they could do a two-player split-screen F-Zero game. So they sort of scaled back to what they could do and came up with a Mario sort of lighter themed, less going on Mario Kart.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, a lot of people, I feel like, look back on Mario Kart and be like, it's so basic. And I don't mean people like our listeners. I mean, like, people like on IGN and stuff, when they do retrospectives, they're like, oh, the outdated graphics, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you have to really consider at the time what a feat it was, you know, with the Mode 7, and just the innovative nature that, you know, that we still think of Nintendo as being at the forefront for, but, you know, especially then, really reshaping the racing game genre into its own subgenre.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, you talk about the Mode 7 stuff, and, you know, it looks silly now, but it was really, this game was gorgeous. This and F-Zero and Pilot Wings, all of the Super Mode 7 heavy stuff. At the time, when we didn't have 3D graphics the way we have them now,
this was mind-blowing.
Yeah, it was nuts, man, to have the world rotate around you with that effect, created the illusion of depth in a way that gaming hadn't really achieved otherwise.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And, you know, this had one of the DSP chips. This was a DSP chip game that gave the game sort of a better handling of floating point calculations to sort of handle all of the three-dimensional rendering math. And so that's why, again, you know, something we talk about a lot anytime we talk about Super Nintendo games is that, you know, a lot of these carts would have specialized chips to help them sort of go above and beyond what the standard SNES hardware would have allowed themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about Mario Kart, Super Mario Kart the original, if I wanted to play Mario Kart, I probably wouldn't pop in Super Mario Kart, just because there have been Mario Kart since then that, you know, play a little smoother, look a little better, but I don't want to be that type of person. But you have to really respect that a lot of the things that we see in the modern Mario Kart games, and, you know, the imitators, you know, just saying it, they are imitators, were in this game. You know, there was drifting, the coins to help your speed, there were the different weapons, the playable roster, the themed tracks, like, the different play modes. I mean, that was something for me that really kind of, stood out, was like, oh, I could do a battle mode. Like, that's not something I could do at the arcade with whatever Ivan's... What was it? What was his name?
Ivan Iron Man Stewart.
Ivan Iron Man Stewart.
How can you not know that?
I was...
I'm trolling you, man.
I'm like, I thought it was Ivan Captain America
Stewart. Oh,
I'm
girl.
I'm trolling, no. But, you know, like, so, like, just the other play modes, the time trials, so, you know, the replayability of it, the different difficulty levels, unlocking the special cup for the first time, like, just, you know, the whole concept of the unlockables, like, we still see that today.
And, you know, I want to wrap this up with just a little trivia. You know, this game initially was not going to be a Mario game. You know, when they were still sort of working on this project as a spin-off from F-Zero, you know, they had very generic characters in overalls racing. And Miyamoto-san, about 3 months into prototyping this, was driving past other characters and didn't feel like a thrill in passing them. And so what he wanted to do, because he already had an emotional connection to all of these Mario characters, is make them Mario characters so that there was more of a thrill. So it's like, oh, I just passed Mario.
Like, whoa!
Yeah.
And I mean, we still see that today where we're like, oh, damn it, Yoshi!
Or, you know, fucking Pink Gold Peach.
Oh, don't get started on Pink Gold Peach, honey.
Oh, man.
She will have her time later. We will be talking about her.
We probably will. All right, well, let's move on now. Let's talk about Mario Kart 64.
Oh, man, Mario Kart 64. Mario Kart 64 came out in late 1996 for the N64, early 1997 for the Western world. It was available on the Wii Virtual Console starting in 2007. And talk about, I mean, you really see this common thread when you talk about the jump from Super NES to N64. I mean, you really have to appreciate, and I'm not gonna go on an N64 love fest. We'll save that for a later date. But there were just, you know, so many things. I mean, the obvious thing being that it was in 3D now. But, I mean, I think, aside from that, you know, another big deal was that there was four-player co-op or versus, you know.
And that was a big deal just in general for every game that era.
It's not really co-op. But, I mean, I wanted to say that, you know, it's really cool that you can choose to play the game cooperatively if you want. Like,
I always have. That's always how my crew has handled unlocks is, you know.
Right, right.
Until everything is unlocked, we are doing these Grand Prix cooperatively.
Right, and I think that's something cool that, you know, is not inherently a game design thing telling you you have to do that, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a little side note. So anyway,
it also introduced the blue shell into the rotation of items.
Oh my god, yeah, that's right. The dreaded blue shell.
Sadly, though it was shown at the Shoshinkai 1995 show, the feather was removed from the game.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Funny enough, also removed from the game, but shown at Shoshinkai, was Magikoopa as a playable character.
And they put DK in its place.
Indeed.
You know, I feel bad for Donkey Kong Jr., except I really don't. But he just got boosted in favor of his daddy.
Back to what you're saying.
Yeah, I was just going to say, once again, Hideki Kono was director on Mario Kart 64. Miyamoto-san produced. Kenta Nagata, who did some of the later games, also did some Square Enix stuff, apparently.
This was actually his first work on a Nintendo game, though.
Was it? He was the composer, and, you know, I think that some of the Super Mario Kart game music was memorable, but I really think of 64 as the first one where things like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Well, you know, it really speaks to the quality of music in this game that this game actually had four different OST releases.
Did it really?
And even in North America, two of them made it over officially.
Wow.
Which, you know, we didn't at this time, especially back in 97, we were not getting a lot of game OSTs released in North America, so this was kind of special.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, you know, you can't really fault Super Mario Kart for its technical limitations, but just really, I think why a lot of people maybe kind of shun playing Super Mario Kart, and, you know, if they were going to go back and play a classic kart, they might just go to Super Mario Kart 64. I'm sorry, not Super Mario Kart 64. Mario Kart 64 is because the tracks were so much, there was, like, you know, elevation, there were bridges, there were all sorts of things that they were able to do. They had the cannons, right? That started in...
Yes.
In Kart 64. And just all of these, you know, things that we think of when we think of a Mario Kart track really took place in this game. And, you know...
Absolutely.
And I don't want to say that Super Mario Kart did not have good track design, but I think a lot of some of the memorable kart tracks that we think of come from 64.
Well, and, you know, another thing is that they added a really important... skill to this game, or maneuver, I should say. Did you talk about drifting into power slides and boosts?
I mean, you talked about the, you know, drifting in the way it existed in Super Mario Kart, where you were kind of just like, eh.
Yeah, but in Kart 64, they upped the ante by changing the way drifts worked, so that when you held a drift, the color of the smoke coming out of your tires would change, and when you released the drift button, you would go into a speed increase. And this became an integral... a mechanic that entire tracks were designed around. I competed in this game in a tournament for Blockbuster Video, and I've talked about
this. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm sorry, not Block... It was a different tournament for Blockbuster Video. This one was for Funko Land at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
I've talked about this here on the show, but, you know, I was in a tournament for this game at Funko Land, and the times were all ridiculous on all the tracks. And when I was timed, I did compete actually really well, but... it was clear all of these people were playing hard like I was. Everyone was doing, you know, their very best to, I always say grind, but it's not a grind, it's a drift, you know, to drift into a power slide, into boost every
grinding
turn.
Grinding on your cart, grinding on your cart.
Right. So clearly, you know, it really changed the way the game was played. And again, from a strategic standpoint, really changed the way that people who were playing seriously, viewed literally every twist and turn in a track while playing.
And I mean, that was an element of strategy that you're right, that you really didn't think about with Super Mario Kart. And I mean, this is the one that really still feels like the karts do today. I would say that, you know, Super Mario Kart
is almost like a prototype.
It's almost like a prototype for what we're used to today.
Exactly so.
And
do you have anything else to say? Because I want to get to the next one pretty quick.
No, I think it's really interesting that, like, the blue shell was added in as a form of balancing. You know, I think that was really, like, an interesting element because they didn't want, you know, too much... they wanted to, you know, not just make it super unfair.
Yeah, yeah, well, they have a funny way of fixing that. fucking blue shells.
Oh, God.
The next game, of course, in the series was 2001's entry Mario Kart Super Circuit.
A.K.A. Mario Kart Advance.
I was just going to say, known in Japan as Mario Kart Advance. This was, of course, as I said, released in 2001. This is notable for being the first game in the series not developed by Nintendo's EAD studios. This was actually developed by Intelligent Systems.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about them here a lot on the show. It was directed by Takeshi Ando and Yukio Morimoto-san, produced by Shigeru Miyamoto and Kenji Miki, and the composers were Kenichi Nishimaki, Masanobu Matsunaga, and Minako Hamano. So, you know, a lot of people who have been involved with the series in various roles now, but at the time were all not necessarily veterans. This, as we said, was available on the Game Boy Advance, and notably is available as a virtual console title after a fashion on the 3DS. This was one of the ambassador titles for original 3DS owners.
That's true.
And, you know, this game, it takes a lot of flack now for being, you know, very similar to Super Mario Kart, issuing a lot of the design advances from Kart 64. And for most people, just by virtue of, you know, link cable fuckery, really played this game as a single-player experience, even though it was an up-to-four-player multiplayer game.
Yeah, it was one of the few single-pack games.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And why don't you explain what a single-pack game is?
Single-pack was when you only needed one cart to play. So what is that called in DS terms? Download play?
I think download play, yeah.
So you only needed one cart to one cartridge to play Kart with your friends. And I mean, that's a pretty good deal, you know, if your friends were kind of broke or whatever, didn't have them.
Yeah, and you know, something else about this game, this entry in the series, I should say, that's particularly notable that a lot of people maybe don't appreciate, is that this game had what were called the Extra Cups, which were reworkings of the vast majority of the tracks from Super Mario Kart present on the game cartridge. And, you know, to a lot of people, this is sort of the forebear to the retro cups that we all have, you know, grown to love.
Yeah. You know, something I did not mention about Mario Kart 64, which was continued in Super Circuit, was that Mario Kart 64 and then again in Super Circuit split up the characters into different weight classes, which is, you know, introduced another strategy. You know, might be heavy but not accelerate as much, or I guess the heavies accelerate pretty fast, but their top speed's not as fast, you know, so really allowing a different level of strategy. Apparently, when I was reading up on this, apparently if you were doing the single pack mode, if you didn't have the game, you had to be Yoshi.
Yeah, I actually remember that, and I think that was why most of my friends weren't willing to play single pack play with me.
Oops.
Right. All right, well, let's move on here. You know, a few years passed between Super Circuit and the next installment in the series. This is, of course, Mario Kart Double Dash. This was released in 2001 for the Nintendo GameCube.
2003.
So 2003 GameCube.
And, of course, the most notable change is that you had two people in a cart. And I think that's one thing that really makes it fun to go back to, even with more modern carts to play. I mean, until Kart 8 came out, we were still going back and playing Double Dash.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Development duties came back to Nintendo's EAD studios for this. It was directed by Kiyoshi Mizuki, Yasuyuki Oyagi, Futoshi Shirai, and Daiji Imai, and produced by Shigeru Miyamoto, Tadashi Sugiyama, Shinya Takahashi, and Takashi Tezuka.
Yeah.
Composed by Shinobu Tanaka and Kenta Nagata. So a lot of people who, again, are associated with the series sort of were on this one, except for Tanaka-san and Nagata-san, the composers. Slidekick, as far as I know, this is the only game that they specifically scored. Does that track your...
Well, didn't Kart 64 have Nagata-san?
Oh yeah, it was actually just Nagata-san. I must just be thinking of Shinobu Tanaka.
Well, you know, Shinobu Tanaka and Kenta Nagata must have loved whistling, because a lot of the music in Double Dash was like...
You're quite right. You know, something really notable about this game is that it supported LAN play if you had a broadband adapter, which I did. It did not support online play, which kind of sucked, but if you had a LAN going, You could play with up to 16 people playing. Yeah,
8 GameCubes.
Yeah, it wasn't that hard, though. And, you know, something that was really cool, or that was actually really awful about that, I'm sorry, was that when you were playing in LAN mode, and I only played a few times, you were, like, on random select for characters.
Oh, wow.
So it was a really strange experience. It felt sort of half-baked. But, you know, cool that they did that they tried something that new and weird and interesting. Mm-hmm. So far, this game is available only on GameCube.
Yep.
There's no, you know, GameCube Virtual Console yet or anything.
Oh, I hope one day.
And Double Dash was actually shown at E3 right around the time that Super Circuit came out, back in 2001. This was sort of just like a real short clip of Mario and Luigi on carts. On, like, at the time, what we would think now of, like, HD. It was, like, the super high-resolution 3D, like, super gorgeously modeled Luigi and Mario on super detailed carts. And it was, like, kind of a big deal at the time. Like, everyone was talking about, oh, my God, Mario Kart, Mario Kart. And, you know, that sort of excitement really showed in the fact that the game in, you know, North America alone ended up selling nearly 4 million units,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't sound like a lot for the Mario Kart series.
Yeah.
But
it was GameCube.
Well, exactly. For a GameCube game, that's a lot. And, you know, that also ignores that, you know, an additional nearly million sold in Japan. So worldwide, this game was one of the better sellers on the GameCube platform.
A little interesting tidbit about the development is that they were originally considering GBA connectivity, but they decided to exclude it, and they didn't want to, you know, kind of make it so that veteran players had an edge, being able to, apparently you were able to escape the banana peel with the GBA when they were testing that out. Something else that was kind of new to Double Dash, aside from the two-player carts, which we'll talk about briefly in a minute, was the additional battle modes. There was the Shine Sprite collecting, and then the Bob-omb. I don't know if there was a special name for it, but like you threw Bob-ombs at each other.
Excellent. You know, we haven't talked too much about battle mode here yet today. We are going to, but we're going to talk about that sort of at the end.
Right, right.
So the next game here was...
Oh, should we talk a little bit about the two-player carts, though?
If you want. I don't have much... What do you have to say about them?
I mean, just because you could play with two people on your cart, you know, by yourself, but you could also play two-player where you would, you know, you and your friend would both be on the cart. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I played that a few times with one of my friends who literally didn't know how to drift or power slide or boost. So that didn't last. Like, I nearly ruined that friendship multiple times.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, the next installment, and this is where things start to get pretty wild in terms of those sales numbers we've been hinting at, is Mario Kart DS. This came out in 2005. It was developed by Nintendo EAD Group Number 1, because this happened after that reorganization where
right.
EAD became appropriately, you know, officially a bunch of different groups, rather than sort of being an unorganized bunch of like, oh, this is, you know, Group A or whatever. This was the first game in the series to have online play using the Nintendo Wi-Fi Connection online service. In fact, this was actually like the flagship game for Nintendo Wi-Fi Connection.
It was.
You know, this was directed by Makoto Wada and Yasuyuki Oyagi. Oyagi-san, of course, we've already talked about here a little bit. Produced by Hideki Kono. So this was not produced with, Miyamoto-san.
Yeah, you know, Kono-san kind of taking over a bigger role in this game.
Composed, of course, by series veteran at this point, Shinobu Tanaka-san. This was available on the Nintendo 3DS. And obviously, if you're looking for
DS.
This... Oops, I do that a lot, my bad.
But you could play it on a 3DS.
Oh, you could, except you couldn't go online, and that's where I'm going here.
Oh, yeah.
As with all Nintendo Wi-Fi Connection games, the online component is no longer available in any official capacity. So if you're listening to this episode, you're like, I'm gonna hunt all these games down. Be aware that if you hunt down Kart DS, you won't be able to play online.
Yeah, and, you know, with DS, you were able to see a little map on the bottom, which was cool. I mean, you were able to see, like, a little outline map before on the earlier games, but this really showed you, like, oh, there's a squid on my screen. I'm going to look down on my touchscreen.
Yeah, in previous installments of the series, we didn't really talk about this minor UI feature, but now it's appropriate to. There was a mini map in the bottom corner of the screen where you could see your location relevant to the locations of other racers. What they did for the DS's second screen is give you like a bird's eye, like colored detailed map, as Slykick was saying, so you could really get a real feel for where you were in relation to other characters, even like positions on the road, so you could use that information for, like, throwing a shell behind you. I would do that a lot.
Right.
You know, this ultimately turned out to be the third best-selling game on the Nintendo DS platform, moving 23.34 million units worldwide.
Wow!
Yes.
And, you know, I remember the ranking, because, you know, you get your place for second, third, maybe you get eighth. Maybe now you get 12th, because you're playing Kart 8. But this was... This one was really, like, really broken down. There was, like, the E to A ranking, and then the stars. So, I mean, it really broke it down to, like, oh, you gotta do better on this track.
And, you know, some design element that they added for this game was the drafting, where you could catch a, like, tailwind from a faster racer going in front
of
you to get a temporary speed boost. So this became, again, you know, another mechanic by which to sort of increase your speed through skillful play, much like, power sliding that we've discussed here.
Mm.
And to me, something that's really interesting about Mario Kart as a franchise is that while Mario Kart has a reputation for being really watered down and silly, and, you know, we haven't talked about it here, but everyone wants to talk about, like, the rubber banding AIs where, you know, if you're in first, all of the computer racers are going to go faster than they're normally allowed to in order to catch up with you. Like, that is a real thing in the game. It's true. It's a real fact. But nobody seems to really pay a lot of attention to the fact that Nintendo consistently, with every iteration, added skill-based mechanics to perform even better and go faster in these games. We saw it with the drifting, we saw it just generally with, you know, how items worked and the way some stages implemented sort of shortcuts only through skillful use of items. And we see that again here with drafting.
Yeah, and that was fun. It was like, ooh! I mean, that was hardly descriptive, but, you know, like, being able to, like, get that extra push ahead to get you over the finish line.
Indeed. And, you know, something else I want to talk about on a technical level is that they really prioritized locking the frame rate of the display at 60 frames a second for the sake of more responsive handling.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something I think that really stands out. Now, I would have, I think a lot of people, when they played Mario Kart DS for the first time, were really shocked, like, man, this game controls so tight and so smooth.
Well, I mean, they were thinking, oh, handheld, LOL.
Yeah, but no, it's a real experience. It controls amazingly because of the 60 frames a second thing. Super responsive.
They really tried a lot of stuff. They did, like, the mission modes, which I don't think came back.
I don't think they have, but I liked them. You know, I thought they were really great. And, you know, this was sort of, and, you know, there was all of the retro cups and stuff that were super, super good. Just, man, Kart DS for me in a lot of ways, like, I wasn't super into Double Dash except playing with friends over drinks. I thought it was an amazing game, but I didn't, like, obsessively play it. Like, I played 64 obsessively, but I didn't play any of the other ones obsessively until DS came out. That man, and you were here, Slykick,
yeah.
I took that with me on BART everywhere I went. You would come over here on Friday nights or whatever, and we'd watch some dumb shit on TV and play Mario Kart.
Probably like Ugly Betty era.
Alright. So, just a great game. I think it really resonated with a lot of people. And that's really, you can sort of see that in that 23.34 million units sold. Like, that's a huge fucking number. And, you know, something else that's interesting is that Nintendo did at the time specifically cite Kono-san in particular, you know, that they really wanted hardcore gamers to play this game the way they were playing Halo. And that sounds silly, you know, now, because we think of such a divide with, like, oh, hardcore gamers don't play Nintendo. But, like, no, Nintendo really saw online happening, and they really did make a real effort to try and get in on that. So, Sidekick, unless you have anything else to add.
Not really, but you, like you said, DS really was packed full of content.
It really, really was.
Had a big roster. I think, was that the one with Dry Bones, or was Dry Bones in 7?
I think Dry Bones was in that. I don't know, that game had a lot of characters.
It really did.
Like, didn't one of them have a playable Wiggler?
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I know that King Boo was in Double Dash, but Wiggler might have been in DS.
Well, I googled it, and Wiggler was playable in 7, so I'm sorry. That was the 3DS game.
Oh, Wiggler, you silly bitch.
All those little feats. All right, well, anyway, the next game here we're going to talk about is, of course, Mario Kart Wii. This released in 2008, and, you know, we laugh, but this is currently the best-selling racing game of all time, and the second best-selling game for the Wii platform, with 35.53 million units sold worldwide.
Yeah, a lot of Wii bundles sold because of Mario Kart.
And, you know, that's something that when we get in, you know, investment, we get financials every quarter. Slowly but surely, Mario Kart Wii continues to creep up the ladder. Like, it continues to sell somehow. I don't even know where all these copies of Mario Kart Wii are coming from, but they're getting sold somewhere.
Yep.
This, of course, did have online play through the Nintendo Wi-Fi connection feature.
R.I.P.
Rest in peace, indeed. It was directed by Yasuyuki Oyagi, who is, again, a series veteran, developed by EAD Group Number 1, composed by Asuka Oda and Ryo Nagamatsu.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's sort of an interesting change.
Again, helmed by Hideki Kono-san.
Yes, yes. And
which is, I mean, this series is really his baby now.
At this point, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, this also brought in the innovation of motion controls, as well as rideable bikes.
Innovation.
You know, I appreciate you have attitude about Waggle like some kind of Halo bro, but come on.
No. I think that, I don't know, at the time, like, when it first came out, I was really into the Wii Wheel. But now going back and playing it, like, I can't do it. I don't know what it is.
You know, so some notable stuff here is that from a designer's perspective, Mario Kart Wii was almost like what they wanted to do with Mario Kart DS. You know, there are a lot of features, a lot of specific tracks, a lot of online stuff specifically, that apparently had initially come up during the sort of planning talks for Mario Kart DS, but that they couldn't do for whatever reason, be it hardware constraints or time constraints, because that was a game they were sort of fast-tracking to the platform, which is a little bit of a recurring theme with this series now. So
yeah, you know, I think that in some ways it might have, I guess I can't say it suffered because it sold 35 million, but, you know, in terms of looking through the series, you know, like, the Wii wasn't in HD, so, you know, it kind of, I think one thing that we noticed, we went back to play Kart Wii to warm up for Kart 8, and it really looked actually uglier than Double Dash.
I do think that is true, I have to say. I still go back to Double Dash and think, man, this game is pretty, but I played Kart Wii, again, just a few weeks ago, and it was like, man, this looks awful. Like,
yeah,
what happened, Nintendo? Damn! So, you know, that did occur. This was actually notable because for me, this was the first time that I really saw a Mario Kart game, being positioned as like a console seller.
Yeah.
And that must be due to the phenomenal sales of Mario Kart DS. But this was the first game where, you know, when they showed a trailer at E3 or whatever, like everyone was talking, like the whole gaming world was like, holy shit, Mario Kart Wii, that's gonna be incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, you know, the little teaser trailers they showed were consistently just really breathtaking. They looked really beautiful, certainly much better than the actual game looks. And, you know, really, really sort of captured all of our interest. So that's really, really fascinating, I felt, you know, to sort of look at it that way, that for whatever reason, and I know you have issues with the HD stuff and what have you, but Kart Wii in a lot of ways was this game becoming a marquee title as a franchise.
Mm. It had a really big roster, too. It had things like Funky Kong was an unlockable character. Dry Bowser, which was a Dry Bones Bowser. So, like, just really, like, I kind of guess stepping into the Pink Cold Peach territory.
Yeah. All right, well, you know, this next game is one that's easy to talk about. This next one, of course, is Mario Kart 7 from 2011. This was developed by Nintendo EAD Group Number 1 with an assist from Retro Studios. Of course, you know, all of the internet fanboys wanted to believe at the time that Retro only assisted with, like, the Donkey Kong assets that they had created for, you know, Donkey Kong Country Returns. But we have definitely learned over the years and through various interviews that they actually handled a pretty big chunk of helping out and doing assist jobs on this. This one was directed by Kosuke Yabuki, produced by Hideki Kono-san and Yasuyuki Oyagi. composed by Kenta Nagata and Satomi Terui. This is, of course, a Nintendo 3DS game. It is still easily available, both on the 3DS eShop and in stores.
Mm-hmm.
This game, of course, supports local play and online multiplayer for up to 8 players at a time.
You can do Spot Pass to get ghosts.
This was the second 3DS game to break the 2 million units sold mark.
Kind of a turning point for the...
And yeah, it was a huge turning point for the 3DS. You may recall before Super Mario 3D Land and Kart 7, the 3DS was sort of floundering in the position that the Wii U was about months ago.
When we launched Game Buoy officially, this is kind of right when the 3DS was starting to turn around.
Indeed. This game now stands as the second best-selling 3DS game of all of them at 9.62 million units sold, bested only by Pokemon X and Y
on the platform.
Really a surprise. No, not at all. But I'm sure by the end of this year, this game will have broken the 10 million mark. So that's very cool and exciting. There's a lot of interesting stuff about this game. They sort of brought on new kart modes of hang gliders and aquatic sections of stages where your kart becomes kind of like a sub. You have sort of different, like, wheels and equipable stuff that unlocks sort of to customize your cart a little bit
more.
There's
over 1,000 possible combinations.
Ooh, girl. So, yeah, I mean, you know, this was another big deal. This was, once again, not only was this game positioned as a marquee title, it was positioned as the game that would save the 3DS.
And it did.
I mean, that to me is the real tagline there. This game was positioned to save an ailing console, and it did. The 3DS went from, you know, kind of a failure to an absolute success. Anyone who tells you that the 3DS is floundering now is lying to you. It's not doing DS numbers, but the DS was an anomaly. I mean, in this post-cell phone world, that the 3DS is doing as well as it is effing nuts, really.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really interesting in the development, they gave priority to Nintendogs and Cats because it was scheduled for release first. So it didn't really have a lot large staff. And then they realized that there were other things like Skyward Sword they were working on. And that's when they pulled in Retro. So I think Retro really, you know, really did help them turn this game into the success that it was.
Yeah, absolutely. This was, of course, the first game in the series to have an online patch.
It was all the Woohoo Wii Resort Islands that had the cheats.
Yeah. Woohoo Loop, Maka Woohoo, and the GBA Bowser Castle 1 classic track.
You know, I hear Woohoo and I think of The Sims, because that's what they call sex in The Sims world. So I'm like, woohoo.
I think of the Christina Aguilera song, Woohoo.
Which was also
licky,
about
licky,
sex.
Licky, licky, yum, yum, what a great guy.
And there you have it. Mario Kart 7's all about sex.
Yeah, no, but this was, you know, this was a great, great game. Really did change the tide of the 3DS. Superb gameplay. Once again, all of the technical stuff was on board. All of the, you know, drifting, drafting, 60 frames a second, all of that stuff was still present. And it really, again, you know, this game, it changed the fate of an entire console. Like, that's a big effing deal. These last few games that we've talked about here, DS, Wii, Mario Kart 7, that is sort of responsible, that run of titles is sort of responsible for the crazy, crazy hype that Mario Kart 8 had leading up to the release of Mario Kart 8, because, you know, we've seen this series save consoles, we've seen this series, get people who don't maybe play these kinds of Nintendo games really passionate and crazy about Nintendo games. And so going into Mario Kart 8, this is sort of a big part of why, you know, everyone was really super crazy hyped for Kart 8. We're talking about games that set records for sales. I mean, it's a pretty, pretty big deal. This little series that started off as like, oh, generic Kartman in overalls racing just to show off our Mode 7 is now one of the pillar franchises of Nintendo.
Indeed.
In fact, in a lot of ways, the Mario Kart series has dwarfed the mainline Mario series.
I would say so, yeah.
In basically every way except, you know, gameplay and enjoyment. But certainly as far as sales and recognition and even, you know, visuals and stuff, man, I tell you, Super Mario 3D World is a beautiful game, but Kart 8 is one of the best looking games I've ever seen.
Let's talk about Kart 8.
Indeed, let us. This was, of course, developed by EAD with an assist from Bandai Namco.
Yeah, Bandai Namco really getting a lot of stuff in there now.
And, you know, they worked on some spinoffs that we're going to talk about after this, that's sort of where they fit in here. But this was, of course, directed by Kosuke Yabuki, produced again by Hideki Kono, composed by Shiho Fuji, Atsuko Asahi, Ryo Nagamatsu, and Yasuaki Iwata. No relation, as far as I'm aware, to Satoru Iwata. It's obviously released, you know, in May of 2014.
Yep.
And, you know,
just a tail end, so just about a month ago.
Indeed. It's like, if you'd like to talk about Mario Kart 8.
It's pretty. It's fun. I like to play it.
See, I like it.
In all seriousness. You know, we initially talked about it when we went to the E3 experience just about a year ago at Best Buy. And, you know, even at the time, like, we were like, oh, it's so pretty, but, of course, the big kind of draw is the anti-gravity sections, which I think, you know, now having played them, I was a little concerned. I was like, ooh, are they gonna be, like, nauseating or whatever, but they're really well done. They don't seem, like, unnatural in the flow of the tracks. And, you know, just really some creative track design as a result. And some really creative reimaginings for the Retro Cup, which was really...
Yeah, you know, they took a lot more liberty with the Retro Cup courses this time around, but to much better result, I feel.
I agree. And of course, there's full Miiverse functionality with stamps, and most notably, YouTube highlights. You can have Mario Kart TV, save your favorite tracks. You can kind of customize it to a degree with a focus on certain characters or certain, like, drifts or power moves. Not power moves, items. Power moves. Power bottoms, hey. If you wanted to focus on, like, action, you could really kind of, you know, customize your little replay video. And some people are like, oh, it's not the same as just straight up recording gameplay footage, but it's fun. It's cute.
It results in things like the Luigi Death Stare.
It does.
I will take the Luigi Death Stare over your shitty Twitch stream any day of the week. I'm sorry.
Hey, guys, I'm a really mean Crash Team Racing here.
I'm PewDiePie. Hi.
Is that how he talks?
No, I don't really think so. I've streamed myself. I think it's a lot of fun. I love streamers. I think streaming is awesome. But there's really something to be said for, like, really cool cinematic camera angles. And again, you know, there are so many amazing details in Mario Kart 8, where there's so many instances where, like, even just during play, where characters will look at each other and give each other death glares, mm-hmm. or, like, someone's passing and, like, your character will look at them and frown. And you don't even catch these details from, like, what would be, like, a quote-unquote normal stream. But once you're watching it with, like, all the dynamic camera angles on Mario Kart TV, you really get to see just how much character is put into all of these animations, and things are animated that you never would have even considered. I mean, I think about, like, this one clip, I see it on Tumblr a lot, where it's, like, Bowser pushing Baby Peach into a pit, and, like, Baby Peach has this horrified look on her face as she's going down, and Bowser looks like the cat who ate the canary.
Wow.
And it's like these animations specifically exist for this purpose. And I can't think of anyone else who, any other developer who would have put that much attention to detail and care into their product. And furthermore, I don't think that would have been well serviced with a Twitch-style stream.
Right.
So I appreciate the complaint because it's, you know, it's not like the pure product or whatever. But if you're willing to step outside of the box and think about it objectively, it really does have some cool bonuses that you get from this style of replay.
Yeah. And, you know, like we said, hang gliders came back, underwater racing with the little bubble, what do they call that? You just get, like, a little bubble fan.
Submersibles? I don't know.
So, you know, all of these things are factored into the track design. The game itself, like you said, looks gorgeous when you're playing single player, or even, it seems, when you're playing two player. Running yes. at 60 frames a second, 1080p.
Any more than two and it starts to fall apart.
It does, but it's still, you get used to it, but when we had Seawolf Jason over, to play when it first came out. You know, we definitely noticed that dip in quality. But, you know, that said, it still looks gorgeous.
It still looks gorgeous.
You've got the Koopa Kids. The Koopalings are making a grand return in this game. Well, I guess they were in one of the recent things, weren't they? One of the
Well, yeah, they were in one of the new Super Mario Bros. Games, but that's not a cart game.
No.
You know, something else this game is bringing to the table is DLC support.
Yes, as we've talked about with the Mercedes-Benz promotion.
Indeed, and you know, it's also going to be getting a patch or DLC of some kind to support
Amiibo.
Indeed, so that's another thing to look forward to. So, you know, let's wrap this up now, because I wanna talk a little bit more abstractly now that we have the details out of the way.
Oh, can we just talk about really quick that Mario Kart 8, has apparently sold 2 million copies?
Well, you know, we talked about the general stockholders meeting that took place earlier this week, and it was revealed that the series has topped the 2 million sold international mark now. Obviously, for some other games that would be, 2 million, who cares, but for a Wii U game, that means more than a third of the existent player base of the Wii U console has bought this game. That is an incredible attach rate. Any game would be lucky to have that kind of attach.
Yeah, I mean, and we've gone to, you know, local Targets and such in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is a big market for video games, of course, and we've seen less Wii U's than PS4s.
Yeah, it's easier in my area right now. It's easier to get a PS4 or Xbox One than it is to get a Wii U.
Yeah.
Every store that has a Mario Kart demo, someone is playing it actively while I'm there. It's really remarkable to see. It's certainly too early to call it a comeback. It's impossible to say, Nintendo's gonna do a little better now. But anecdotally, we have seen things at least look different. It's no longer a stack of dusty Wii U boxes, because some of these local Targets were looking pretty dire, and now they straight up don't have stock.
Ah, which is good news.
All right, well, with that having been said,
we're going to talk about those arcade titles.
Okay, let's talk about the arcade titles.
Yeah, so you were mentioning that Bandai Namco took part in the development of Mario Kart 8, and this isn't anything brand new, like, Bandai Namco is working on Smash as well, because Namco, before the Bandai sort of merger, has been involved with Mario Kart to a certain degree because they did the Mario Kart Arcade GP series, which is exclusive to arcades, uses the Triforce board that F-Zero AX also uses. And on certain ones, you can also get like a magnetic card and save your unlockables and your records, which is cool, you know. Something that you see in arcade games sometimes. Initial D does that a lot, right?
Yeah, a lot of Japanese arcade games do that.
You can get your picture taken, and it'll show it above your character during the multiplayer races. So kind of some fun things. And, of course, with Namco handling the development, it has Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man, and Blinky appear. One of them had a Tamagotchi. The latest one had Dawn from the Taiko no Tatsujin games.
Yeah, in fact, you specifically, every time we talk about Taiko no Tatsujin, you talk about Dawn and how cute Dawn is.
Because he's so adorable, right. And so, you know, it's kind of its own little beast. You know, it's an actual sit down in a machine, press the pedal, steer the wheel. So it's, you know, more like it's a classic arcade racer.
Pass the rice, seal the dice.
Ah! Yeah, but you know, with the elements that we've talked about, items and all that sort of thing, you can also have a shield when you're power sliding, so that's kind of a cool exclusive feature. And you know, I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it. 2005 is when we saw it, the original Mario Kart Arcade GP. The sequel, Arcade GP 2, came out in 2007, 2008, depending on region. And then recently, in 2013 in Japan, we got Mario Kart Arcade GP DX, which had a brief run earlier this year in North America at the Dave & Buster's restaurant, which I wish I had realized. I would have done a Dave & Buster's night.
And, you know, something I want to say, I certainly don't want to condone game piracy, but it really is worth mentioning, you know, the arcade version of this game runs on the Triforce arcade hardware, which is basically just a glorified Wii. And true to that, in fact, you can download Mario Kart Arcade GP to your hacked Wii if you have one.
Yeah, homebrew. Sort
now, I am not recommending that you do this. Software piracy, you should not do this. But for those of you out there who are interested in such things, it is probably something you'll want to read up on.
Yeah. So, you know, those of you who happen to have an arcade in your area, if you're lucky, if you're in Chicago, apparently there's a ton, right?
Ah, right. Chicago, man.
But, you know, I mean, you see this sort of thing at, like, any sort of, like, kart and golf place. It's typically there. Disneyland's arcade has one. So, you know, you can find these a lot more easily than you can, maybe, Primal Rage 2.
There was also going to be a Mario Kart game for the Virtual Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Super Mario Kart Virtual Cup. It was going to launch in 1995, but was canceled due to the Virtual Boy's failure.
Womp womp.
Bum bum ba-dum.
We're gonna have to talk about Virtual Boy one day. I mean, we talk about it a lot, but your beloved Virtual Boy.
We do. We talk about Virtual Boy a lot, but if we talk about it on like an It's Dead show, I'll have to acknowledge it's dead, and I don't want to. Let's talk about Battle Mode real quick. We didn't talk about that too much here.
Oh, yeah.
One of the mainstay features of the Mario Kart series, of course, you have, you know, your different play options. There's the Grand Prix, which is typically you, the player, and one friend racing, you know, six computer opponents, so mm-hmm. eight total, for, like, cups, and, you know, you get a bronze, silver, or gold cup.
If you get enough points.
If you get enough points by winning enough races. I felt like that was implied since it's a competition. But, and, you know, that's sort of like the meat and potatoes. You have versus races, which are typically you and one friend, or more, depending on what console you're playing. Where you just sort of race on one track, or more recently, a small handful of tracks to sort of, you know, just more straightforwardly race, but you still have your items and stuff. The third mode, and this is probably one that is a mainstay of the series and really notable, is the Battle Mode. Mm-hmm. And in all games in the series but 8, Battle Mode would put you on sort of free-form arenas with typically no time limit, and you would basically just have to compete for, you know, bombs or shells or balloons or what
have you.
There's
a coin race in one of them.
Coins. And again, you know, you'd have these really cool, like arena tracks designed specifically to be fought in.
Yeah, you're like at the top of a building or in a, like, death cage.
Yeah, my favorite was probably 64 for this. I loved the donut one that had lava in the middle.
Yeah.
And I loved the ones at the Block Fort, I think it was called.
I loved Block Fort. You just drive up into, like, the colorful way. You're like, oh, Yoshi's in the red. Go get that bastard.
Yeah. Oh, man. We'd play in, like, unofficial teams. And yeah. So, like, if one of us saw someone, we'd be, like, chatting with one of our teammates, like, oh, shit, Amanda's in the green fort. And we'd all, like me and my teammate would be trying to get to the green fort while, like, our friend Amanda and whoever she was playing with, usually Space Pirate Ben, would, like, be, like, trying to, like, escape while also getting some green shells off on us. It was just really a great experience. Which, that sort of leads into the sort of controversy, because Mario Kart 8 does not have a battle mode like that.
It does not.
It has a mode similar to that functionally, but instead of having arenas, you're just playing on, like, normal course tracks. And it's cool, it's still fun, but it does lack some of the, like, almost, like, intensity of being, you know, mano a mano in a arena designed for a duel.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are hoping that because there's DLC coming to Kart 8 that maybe a battle arena mode will be added. We can only cross our fingers. We have no, like, rumors or anything. But, you know, we can wish.
Indeed, man.
You can take to social media and tweet at Nintendo.
All I can say, and, you know, I put this on my post-play survey for Club Nintendo after I took it. I was just like, you know, I love this game. One of the things that you could easily do is add DLC battle mode arenas. I would happily give you my money. And, you know, I urge you, if you haven't done your post-play survey yet for Mario Kart 8 and you want a battle mode arena, you know, to do that. Just let them know. Nintendo has really sort of changed as far as, you know, really going out of their way to listen and respond to fan requests. So
that's true.
Make your voice heard. All right, well, unless you have much more to add, I think I want to wrap up the Mario Kart discussion.
Time trials.
Okay,
time trials are
that is another mode I didn't talk about.
Time trials are really in all sorts of racing games.
Hold on, though, because Mario Kart did innovate there.
With the mushrooms?
No.
With the ghosts?
Man, I wish you would stop talking so I could just tell you. So, you know, it was normal for racing games, even of the time, to have time trials. You'd pick a course and just race it for the best time you could get on the course. Something that Mario Kart started was allowing you to race against a ghost of your own previous best performance.
Yeah.
Of course, this has changed a little bit for the better in more recent iterations, where until you set your own ghost, you'll be able to play against, like, developer ghosts.
Ghosts, and I think you can download friends' ghosts in Kart 8, right?
You definitely, I'm pretty sure you could in Wii. I don't know about Kart 8, but probably in Kart 8.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, that's another area where, as a racing game, Mario Kart really, as a series, broke ground. I want to talk to you a little bit, and let's get a little bit more, subjective real quick. We still have some stuff we want to talk about in this episode, but I think it would be worthwhile. Sidekick, why don't you tell me what your favorite Mario Kart track is?
Oh my gosh, my favorite Mario Kart track? That's a tough one.
You can just name one you really, really like. No one's gonna hold you to it if it's not your actual favorite in, like, a month. If you say right now, oh, it's Koopa Beach, and then next month you say it's Bowser's Castle GBA, no one's gonna, like, crucify you.
I mean, I probably have to say the Royal Raceway, Princess Peach's Castle, from Mario Kart 64. It had a really well done reimagining in Kart 8. I love the music, I just love the layout, it's fun, it's classic. My second place would be to Baby Park. Baby Park from Double Dash is really simple. It's just a loop. But like you said, you can, like, really, like, you know, you really have to be on your grind, on your drift. You have to, you know, watch out for items. And it's, like, in a theme park, so it's super cute. What about you, Captain Spike?
I would probably have to go with Cloud Top Cruise from Mario Kart 8.
Oh, such a good one.
Yeah, I love it. I love the music. I love the course design. I love sort of the various stage obstacles and environmental issues. I love the shortcuts. This is a stage where everything clicks into place for me. Every time I play it, I get excited.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Why don't we talk a little bit, Sidekick? How do you feel? I know that you love kart racing games, even though you don't really like other kinds of racing games.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I don't love other types of racing games, but like I said earlier in the episode, I feel like kart racing is a lot more accessible. It puts the focus on fun and kind of, like, wacky antics while still being competitive. Like, you know, once you get into, like, the mirror mode and stuff in the more recent games, there's some challenge there, and the AI in Mario Kart 8 is pretty ramped up, I feel. So
yeah, no, absolutely.
So, I mean, there's definitely still is that challenge. There are, you know, ways to play it that aren't, you know, inherently forced upon you in the game design. Like we said, you know, you and I are, you know, trying to still unlock some stuff on your Mario Kart 8 game. But, you know, then we go into a tournament mode and we're like, sorry, I just hit you with a red shell. Biatch.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's very interesting. You know, I almost feel like that kind of appeal is probably a big part of why this series has blown up. Because, again, you know, this is, I appreciate that the mainstream video game press doesn't talk about it that much, but you look at these sales numbers of this series historically, and it's up there, it's past, I would say, most installments of, you know, Call of Duty, certainly Halo, you know, Gears of War, God of War, like, in terms of sales numbers, these things don't even come close to Mario Kart. So, I appreciate... I
mean, let alone stuff like Forza's and Gran Turismo's, probably.
Oh, yeah, other racers, yeah, they can't even touch Mario Kart. They can't even pretend. They can't even dream of touching Mario Kart. So... And I sort of feel like that sort of accessibility and sort of different take on, like, the racing formula is probably a big part of that.
Right. Like, for example, the Forza games, I personally can't get super into because, you know, they're really, I appreciate that they're made to be car simulators, basically, and function like
Horizon isn't, which is why everyone loves Horizon. Yeah. But I'm sorry, get back to your point.
And I just find the, like, you know, controls very clunky for me. I'm sure that that's just my own clumsiness, but I think, you know, that might also be coming from...
Girl, I've seen you drive a car. I know it do.
Oh, girl. You know, but that said, you know, my background coming from largely a kart racing background, and then, like, you know, the very early arcade racers that were not, like, super realism centered. So, You know, I think that's the thing, like, you know, that it still manages to be fun. It still has the element of racing and, you know, the energy and the excitement without being like, oh, you straight up, I remember playing a game, like one of the Formula One games, I think, for Sega CD. And I remember, like, always, like, you know, I was like, oh, I got my sponsorship with Ferrari or whatever. And then, like, oh, you didn't qualify enough on this Sega circuit in London, whatever. Sorry. And I was like, ugh. So, you know, I think just the fun, the accessibility, and, you know, just the replayability, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't necessarily have a lot more to talk about Mario Kart. Is there anything else you wanted to say? Any additional points you wanted to go over?
No, I mean, just that, like you said, it is something that people look forward to on each new Nintendo hardware release, that it is a pillar of the Nintendo family, and in many ways, console saver.
Well, in many ways, I would say it's the primary pillar at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you look at the sales numbers, definitely in the...
Well, what else can we look at?
Well, I mean, you also have to look at the appeal of, you know, just the genre. You know, we like to play it, and we're pretty serious gamers. I mean, I might not consider myself like a, ooh, hardcore gamer, like Call of Duty bro, but, you know, it's accessible for families who are like, oh, we got the Wii, and we're gonna play Super Mario Kart.
I knew you were gonna find some damn way to say Mario. Gosh darn
it. That's how soccer moms say it. They're like, we're gonna go get some pasta.
I have never met a single human being other than you that pronounces Mario as Mario.
I don't intentionally pronounce it Mario.
Prove it.
You're gonna get some angry soccer moms being like, how dare you mock my accent when I talk about Super Mario Kart and pasta? But anyway, like, you know, and I don't mean to single out soccer moms, but I think, you know, you look at the sales numbers, especially for Kart Wii, being a console seller, selling so many consoles. And, you know, I think that probably the new Super Mario franchise is another big one that has a lot of crossover appeal, but you also have to look at, you know, Smash is kind of still its own little niche community within the larger, like, Mario franchise.
Yeah, I mean, the Smash games typically outperform the Mario games.
Yeah, and then the mainline Mario games at this point are even more, almost more, a little bit niche.
Well, that's kind of what I mean, is, you know, Melee outsold both of the Mario Galaxy games.
Oh, you mean Brawl?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, Brawl. Brawl outsold both of the Galaxy games. Melee outsold most games that weren't Mario Kart Double Dash.
Yeah, and then the kart games just blow them away.
Yeah, the kart games blow them away. And it's almost funny that Kart and Smash, which are both spin-off titles from, you know, Mario and Zelda, like, it's almost like they're almost like Tier 2 games, but they're the ones that drive the sales.
Yep.
You look at the sales numbers of, like, the Zelda games or the Mario games, and they are definitely secondary to the Smashes and the Karts and what have you. And then you have, like, C-tier, which is, like, Pikmin and Wonderful 101, and, like, aww, you, me, and the Koopa Club guys buy those, and basically no one else.
Aww.
Anyway, all right, well, let's wrap this up. Let's talk about some notable kart games.
Copy karts.
Copy karts. Oh, my God, did you just come up with that?
I did.
Well done, well done. Why don't you start us off with Angry Birds Go? What can you tell me about Angry Birds Go?
I haven't spent any time with it. It's about the Angry Birds. They are going.
So Angry Birds Go is a kart game. It is for iOS, and it basically starts as a kart game, and like, it has this whole mechanic of, like, oh, as you're playing, you're getting more resources to upgrade your kart to make it into a real car. The gameplay doesn't really change meaningfully. It's basically just an iOS touchscreen kart clone themed around Angry Birds.
Yeah, and I mean, you really, the theming, I think, is the big point. That everybody and their mother, like, try to, I mean, especially back in the heyday with, like, Kart 64 being such a huge, well-received game, everyone and their mother wanted to make their own kart.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and unfortunately, I don't really have a lot to say about Angry Birds Go. I've played it, but it seems largely a vehicle for microtransactions. We've talked about that here on the show, in fact, where some of these microtransactions are like $50 and shit. Like, that's too much money for a fucking virtual cart. I'm sorry. But we also had Banjo Pilot.
Yeah, we talked about that very briefly on our Rare episode. It was originally going to be Diddy Kong Pilot.
Indeed, indeed. But, you know, and it did come out. It's like a pseudo-sequel to Diddy Kong Racing, which I think will probably be the spin-off kart game we sort of actually get into, because most of these were basically just going to tell you the real basic information, unless we have any real specific strong gaming memories to talk about. And I don't for Angry Birds Go or Banjo Pilot, but do you know what one I do?
Which one?
This was Bizarre Creations' 2010 game Blur.
Oh, that's right. You love that.
This was for Windows, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360. And so it's kind of weird because it's not a kart game in terms of you're on go-karts. You are in cars, but it plays identical to a Mario Kart game
in basically
every other way. You have drifts with speed boosts, you have weapons, you have, like, all of the same kinds of, like, acceleration and traction stats that you have in a Mario Kart game. It really just feels like a Mario Kart game themed in, like, too cool for school, hardcore bro
aesthetics. I mean,
it's
weird because when I saw you playing this, I was like, oh, is this like a Need for Speed sort of games? Or like a Midnight Club? Like very like flashy, like woo! But no, it straight up plays like a just really flashy looking kart game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's really basically what it is. So, you know, I don't really have a lot to say about it other than, you know, it controlled super tight. It was a really great experience. It's still available. You can still pick it up for pretty cheap at this point, I'm sure. If you're out there, of course, hit me up. I have it on Xbox 360. I'd love to play with any of y'all out there in internet radio.
I'd love if they made it available for Xbox One.
Yeah, I would absolutely play a new Blur game. But, you know, there was a whole issue because that was published by Activision.
Yeah.
They were going to do a sequel, but you know how that whole corporate machine
Bizarre
works.
Got shut down, Bizarre Creations.
Uh-huh. It was a whole big deal, because they were a great little studio. They did some great work on some big games, surprisingly. And Activision really did them dirty, so. The next game I want to talk about is the PlayStation 2 game Bomberman Kart.
And I remember that.
This is notable because it's never been released in the United States. But in Japan, there were two different versions. There was Bomberman Kart and Bomberman Kart DX. Now, the first version, the original one, also released in Europe. These were in, this was in 2001 in Japan, and 2003 in Europe. And then the DX version came out in Japan in 2004. And now this game, I'm fortunate enough to have a import copy of the original release, not DX.
Oh, do you?
But it's really cool. It plays very similar to a Mario Kart, but with kind of its own flavor on how it handles, like, boosts and stuff.
That's cool. Like I remember hearing about it and then being mad that it didn't make it over here.
Yeah, it had like a little trick system and stuff. It was really cool. I'll have to dig this out. You know, this might be the kind of game I've been talking with Ian over at the Koopa Club podcast because he's been doing streams on Twitch. He got one of those Elgato capture boxes.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been talking about grabbing one of those and doing some streams of some of my Stranger games. Especially after all the kerfuffle over these last few weeks of gamers not knowing what Vib Ribbon is.
Oh, hell no.
Not knowing what Phantom Dust is.
Hell no.
Right? Like, it'd probably be cool to stream some of this stuff to our listeners. And give them commentaries so that they can hate listening to us talk even more. Right? So, you know, that was a game that happened. There was also, you know, there was a Cartoon Network racing game.
Yeah, kind of in that, like, Johnny Bravo, Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Lab era.
Exactly. But, you know, it's cool if you like those characters. I don't have a lot to say about it. There was also a series of Nicktoons kart racers. And
these always
had really interesting casts because some of them would have, like, straight up, like, Invader Zim in them. And that was really cool. I know one of the more recent ones had, like, throwback characters, so, like, Ren and Stimpy were in it. I don't think Doug was because of the whole Disney thing, but Rugrats were.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's cool. You know, a lot of times, man, these kart racers, you know, some of the Hello Kitty kart racers, of which there are several, a lot of times.
Wii U Hello Kitty racer, right?
Yeah, it's like, Hello Kitty Cruisers or something.
Hello Kitty's going cruising.
Ooh, hi. Well, and I mean, the game retailed for $20. That basically tells you everything you need to know.
Oh.
Yeah, I should buy it, though. It'd probably be good for a lark.
Yeah, I bet Rob Roberts would like it.
And part of why we're glossing over most of these games and just calling out the ones that are legitimately good is because most of them are licensed cash-ins.
Yeah, you got M&M's kart racing, which actually M&M's kart racing is notable. Wait, was M&M's kart racing the one that Jake Kaufman did music for?
I believe so.
Or was that just an M&M No, that was an M&M platformer, but he might have also done kart racing.
So, you know, a lot of these games, they're really bad because Mario Kart was such a smash success, no pun intended, that everyone wanted to ape it, and anyone who had a character IP that they thought could do successful and attract people to a racing game, if attached to it, basically all of those companies that thought they had that made an attempt. And that's really what we're looking at here for most of these games, and also this next one, which comes from a very strange marriage.
Just to clarify, it was not M&M's kart racing that was Jake Furt Kaufman. He was on M&M's Mini Madness, which was a platformer for GBC.
Excellent.
M&M's kart racing was ranked like 1 out of 10.
Have you ever wanted to race as Sid Highwind?
Yeah.
Well, in 1990...
Or should I say, fuck yeah.
In 1999, for the PlayStation 1, Square, or as you might have known them at the time, Square Electronics Arts...
Squaresoft?
Oh, yeah, they did use the Squaresoft branding, despite the fact that they were no longer called Squaresoft.
I forgot that they were with EA. That was a strange marriage indeed.
That was, yeah. But we got Chocobo Racing for the PlayStation 1. Now, this is, of course, different from the Chocobo Racing minigame in Final Fantasy VII.
I was having a bit of a brain fart earlier, and I saw some of our listener responses talking about Chocobo Racing. I was like, wait, you mean they liked racing Chocobo? Oh!
Something that's interesting about this game is that most people I know who played it, myself included, we all remember it really fondly. But magazines at the time absolutely blasted it. They said that it controlled imprecisely, that like the power-ups and extra stuff, like, didn't really contribute to the flow of gameplay. And that's weird. Like, I remember really enjoying playing it. The game had this really cool, like, story mode where the story was sort of told through, like, a pop-up book. There was, like, Moogles and Chocobos. Sid was a playable character. You had, like, Cloud as a playable character. It was just a really neat little, like, really neat little game. And I thought it played pretty well. You can still find, copies of this. I just was looking at, and, you know, I was looking for complete in-box copies. They were, like, $40 online. But if you don't mind going disc only, you can get a copy of this for under $20.
That's cool.
So I think it's a good game. Admittedly, I haven't played it in years, but I remember having a lot of fun with it. Slag, do you have any experience with this game?
Not really. I mean, I remember it, although very, very on a minimal level, as you can tell by when you say Chocobo Racing, I think of the mini game on the Golden Saucer. Mini game, more like a fucking, necessity to get the final materia.
Knights of the Round?
Oh man. That's my number one turn off for Final Fantasy VII, but we're not talking about that.
Knights of the Round is?
No, the whole gold chocobo breeding fucking bullshit.
Okay, see, I, just played Final Fantasy VII all the way through for my first time like 2 years ago. Maybe, probably more like three or four now, I guess, because a friend of mine that's dead now wasn't dead then. Anyway, so it's been a few years since I've played it. And I have to say, at the time, though, I did the Chocobo Racing stuff in about 45 minutes. Like, it's very easy to go through.
I was
and just
consulting,
do it.
Like, shitty game facts that everybody had a different, like, strategy how to get gold chocobos, but we're not talking about that.
So, in any event.
That is not Chocobo Karting.
All right. So, Chocobo Racing, again, very, very much, sort of a take on the Mario Kart formula, and it got called out for it as such at the time. I remember it pretty fondly, but apparently reviewers at the time did not care for it. So I want to skip ahead here, and I want to talk next, of course, about the Crash Racing series.
Yeah, you know, Crash...
This is Crash Nitro Kart, Crash Tag Team Racing, and Crash Team Racing. You were saying, Slag?
I was just saying, you know, Crash Bandicoot had his little Bandicoot nose and everything, including karting. And I mean, it's funny to think, you know, Naughty Dog now is like, oh yeah, Uncharted, like, you know, cream of the crop. And, you know, just to kind of think that they got their start with all of this, Mario cloning. But, you know, I have to say that the Crash games, they really did try to, you know, put out a legitimate crash racing experience. I don't remember them controlling quite as well, but they weren't, like, effing broken or anything.
Well, Crash Team Racing in particular was the first one. That was the one developed by Naughty Dog. It was actually the last Crash game they did.
Oh, really?
Yes.
One thing that I was reading about when we were looking this up, one thing that I was reading about when we were doing research for this episode was that they actually built a replica of one of the courses from Diddy Kong Racing to kind of see how viable a PlayStation racing game, you know, in terms of that sort of scale, how it'd be possible. And, you know, I think they were overall pretty successful.
Yeah, this game is available on PSN as a PS1 classic if you want to play it on the PS3. It has, you know, good track design, great controls. It really does, of most of the games that we're talking about in this segment, this and maybe one other really stand up as, like, on the level of Mario Kart. Like, they deserve to be mentioned in the same breath.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I can't speak to the sequels, but definitely Team Racing.
Well, and the sequels were, again, done by different people. In fact, Crash Nitro Kart had an N-Gage port.
Whoa.
Right? So I really just want to talk about Crash Team Racing. I think that we can let the Crash fans rest. We won't talk about, you know, some of this other crap. But, you know, basically, this one was a great game. Played very, very similar to Mario Kart. It had a power slide with, you know, the drifts and stuff. But it had a mechanic where if you held on to a drift too long, because, you know, in Mario Kart, you can hold a drift even once you're at, like, your max boost level. You can just hold it indefinitely till you hit a wall or something. In Crash, if you held on to it for too long, it would backfire and your engine would, like, sputter and you would lose speed for, like, several seconds. So it was actually a little more skill-based than Mario Kart really is.
Yeah, I remember there was the CTR challenge. You had to collect the tokens. I didn't like that mode very much, but, you know,
it had bosses.
Like, they really did try the boss garage. Yeah, they really did try to, you know, differentiate it. And, you know, when you were looking for things to play on your PS1 and you didn't feel like loading up your N64, which, I mean, I don't know why that would be the case. It was fun, you know, if you're like, oh, let's play Crash Team Racing for a change.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about this next game. This is, of course, the other game that really stands toe-to-toe with Mario Kart. And the reason why, you know, you sort of don't think about it as competition to Mario Kart is because it's also a Nintendo game.
Yeah.
This was, of course, Rareware's 1997 release, Diddy Kong Racing.
Diddy, diddy, diddy.
This, of course, is probably most familiar for two things. The first, of course, is that every track had, like, a plane rate, like track, and a, like, hover boat, like, water track, and a flying plane track. And you could mix and match within the same match, like, what vehicle type you were going to use.
Uh-huh.
Like, we could be playing a four-player mode, and, like, me and Slagkick and Seawolf Jason and Space Pirate Ben could all be using different vehicle types, and we'd still be in the same race. And strangely, somehow, mostly they were balanced. Like, just because you were using a plane and I was using a cart didn't mean that you were going to win.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. It also had an adventure mode where, you know, you explored an overworld, like a hub world that led to all the different races. It itself had secrets and stuff. Of course, some of the tracks had secrets and things. It was really a very big deal.
Yeah, you know, this had an interesting development story. It was originally going to be a sequel to RC Pro-Am, but then Miyamoto-san said, oh, why don't you use Diddy Kong and theme it around there? So they put Diddy Kong in the game. You know, they took some of the other characters, like Banjo was in here, Conker before he had his post-pubescent swear fest, poop fest. And so, like you said, you know, really, you know, at its time, we were like, whoa, you could be a plane in this. And, you know, it really, like you said, it really wasn't competition for Mario Kart, but it kind of was, you know. I enjoyed playing both for what it's worth. You know, I liked Mario Kart 64 a lot. It was a great game, very solid, great tracks. But then sometimes I'd be like, you know, let's play Diddy Kong Racing.
And, you know, something about this game that in Diddy Kong Racing, I used Banjo because I knew Banjo-Kazooie was going to come out the next year.
Oh, yeah?
So I just wanted to get familiar with, I'm Banjo!
You were using a very, like, oh.
That's how his voice clip sounded, though.
I know. I'm just saying, but you're like, oh, I'm Banjo.
Yes, that is how Banjo sounded.
Banjo sounded.
This game had an enhanced remake for the DS titled Diddy Kong Racing DS.
It did.
Released in 2007. And, you know, the game did also, much like Crash Team Racing, have boss battles and stuff. So, you know, this was another really forward-thinking kart racing game. And I think something that really speaks volumes here about what we've sort of a running thread through this episode is that the Mario Kart clones, just, you know, kart racing games that didn't ape kart directly and brought something new to the table, those are the ones that really stand out as noteworthy.
Right.
You know, some of this stuff where it's just, oh, let's just take a Mario Kart clone and put Billy and Mandy and Grim Death in it.
Or let's put the Muppets in it.
Yeah, those ones are not the ones that did super well. So, you know, I actually love Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah.
Can I
piggyback on Diddy Kong Racing and
sure.
Revisit Mickey Speedway USA? Now, we've talked about this twice, I believe. We briefly mentioned it in our Disney episode.
Well, you need to stop shouting that episode out. It was a year ago. Like, that episode was a year ago. That was last summer.
Just saying. And, you know, we talked about it in our Rare episode that more recently did with Jeremy Johnson. But, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand with Diddy Kong Racing to a degree because it did use a modified Diddy Kong Racing engine. I mean, I feel like I've kind of talked about this before. It was solid, but it was really a lot more just like a Mario Kart clone. But, you know, the physics felt fine. You know, it wasn't just like a complete mess. And, you know, it was a pretty good, you know, like you said, if you're like, oh, I'm getting a little bit tired of playing these tracks, I want to mix it up a little bit, it was not a bad alternative. Or maybe if you were, like, growing up in a household where, for some reason, Mario was too offensive, but Mickey was not, maybe, you know, this was the only kart experience you had. It was pretty solid.
Excellent.
But, I mean, really, really, really pretty much an exact clone of Mario Kart. It really did not have anything that I remember being, like, super standout different.
The next game I want to talk about here is Digimon Racing.
Digimon, Digital Racing. Digimon are the racers.
This released for the Game Boy Advance in 2004. And it's actually like a really straightforward Mario Kart Super Circuit clone. This is a Game Boy Advance game. And if you look at like even screenshots of it, like they aped the Super Circuit art style pretty closely.
Oh my god, yeah, I'm looking at a screenshot right now, like some Mode 7 realness.
Yeah, it did. In fact, it did use the Mode 7 engine in order to create sort of that whole three-dimensional look. Something interesting, though, is it actually had a lot of voice acting in the game, which not many GBA games did. Still, you know, it reviewed poorly. My time with it was literally playing, like, two races of it on a buddy's cart. Mm. I was not impressed.
Did you race as Agumon?
I don't know, because I'm not a Digimon person.
Agumon was the one who looks like the Charmander.
Okay.
The little T-Rex guy. He's the only one I know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. So, moving on to the next game, I want to talk a little bit about Jack X Combat Racing.
Whoa, you're talking about doing what?
Jack X Combat Racing.
Whoa. No, of course you're talking about Jack from Jack and Daxter fame.
Indeed, of course. This was actually, funny enough, you know, this was a Naughty Dog game. And the last Jack and Daxter game developed by Naughty Dog.
Oh, so that's kind of their swan song is to do a kart game. So that means in 2016, 2017, look forward to Uncharted Kart. Uncharted! Uncharted!
I'm kind of mad Uncharted 4 isn't uncarted now.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, this again, much
the
like
The Last of Us.
Much like Crash Team Racing. This game what reviewed well, it controlled great, it had great power-ups and stuff. I don't have a lot bad to say about it. I didn't even like Jack and Daxter or whatever, but I liked this game.
Jack and Daxter was okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have strong feelings about it one way or another. But at the time, I did not care for the setting and franchise, and I still thought the game was great. It controls great, it plays great. It's definitely worth looking into if you're into Jack and Daxter, or, you know, kart games. It's pretty cool. Apparently, a lot of people compare it to Twisted Metal, but, like, it feels like a kart game to me. It does not feel like a Twisted Metal-style vehicular combat game to me.
Yeah.
The next one I want to talk about is Konami's Crazy Racers. This was released in Japan as Konami YY Racing Advance, and on mobile phones as Crazy Kart Racing. The GBA version, which is what we're here to talk about, released with the Game Boy Advance launch back in 2001. This was a launch title. It was an absolutely unapologetic Mario Kart clone with Konami playable characters. Aww. So, you know, you could be Goemon, you could be a Belmont, you could be the Ninja Gray Fox from Metal Gear Solid, you could be one of the little ships from Gradius, you could be Dracula, you could be Moai Head.
That's funny.
So this game, and this game really sold to nerds for the Konami aspect. The track design was awful, it controlled really sloppy, it was not a good game, but Konami!
You know, I was looking it up, and apparently EGM, back in the day, rated it number 10 on the top 10 list of the best Game Boy Advance games.
Oh, how interesting! Oh, and the sequel version, the mobile version, is apparently actually a sequel that has different characters. That's something I'm learning right now.
You can play as Pyramid Head.
Oh, hell yeah. I love when Pyramid Head is in inappropriate games, like the DS remake of International Track and Field.
You're just like, yep, just gonna kill people.
Just gonna kill and do the bad R-word to people.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's Pyramid Head, dog. Pyramid Head is not a good guy.
Yeah, a lot of people like to do sexy cosplay of him.
Yeah, well, people have some really messed up priorities. You know, there was also, and I'm going to mention a couple more here that I don't have a lot to say about, but I want to just mention, you know, because we've talked about how a lot of these cart games are licensed
like
ripoffs. LOL, yeah, more like fart games indeed. Of course, there was Lego Racers, there's Looney Tunes Racing, Madagascar Karts.
Well, I mean, Lego Racers was kind of like, I just remember reading about it being like, oh, build your own kart. And I guess to me at the time, I was like, oh, that's cool. I didn't play it, though.
I figured you might have something to say about Little Big Planet karting.
Oh, yeah. Should we talk about Modern Nation, though, first?
Why don't you just talk about them both in one?
Well, yeah, let's talk about Modern Nation Racers first. That was developed by United Front Games for PS3 and PSP, published by Sony Computer Entertainment. And speaking of creating content, it was really kind of that whole play, create, share sort of attitude. You know, it really encouraged you to design your own tracks, to design your own vehicles. You can make your little characters who kind of looked like little Sackboy guys at the time. You know, so I would say that it was kind of aping off of Little Big Planet a bit, but, you know, both heavily involved with, you know, Sony themselves. So, published by Sony. So it wasn't really, I don't think, meant to be a ripoff, but it took that concept, which is cool. And then United Front Games a few years later. So, Mod Nation Racers came out in 2010. And then 2 years later in 2012, they teamed up with Media Molecule to do Little Big Planet Racing. I'm sorry, Little Big Planet Karting, which really built on the concept that Mod Nation Racers had developed. But, of course, using Sackboy, really trying to push with some of the mechanics, like the grappling hook, and still really heavily based on the user-generated content. I mean, it's a cute little game. I know that Little Big Planet isn't everyone's cup of tea, but, you know, I think that both these games really try to do something different, and that's like what, you know, when we said when a kart game does something different is really when it stands out. And I thought they were both solid. I haven't spent a ton of time with either, but, you know, they both kind of feel pretty good.
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, so I'm glad that you brought that up the way you did, because in a lot of ways, really, Little Big Planet karting is Mod Nation Racers 2. Definitely, like, they're made by the same people. A lot of the lessons learned in the design of Mod Nation Racers comes into play in Little Big Planet karting. So I'm glad you brought those up the way you did. That was really well done. Good job, Slidekick.
Oh, thank you.
You know, the next one I want to talk about is sort of a weird, lesser-known game for the PS1 called Motor Toon Grand Prix. This was actually, funny enough, and the reason why I want to bring it up, this was sort of the first game by the team that would later become Polyphony Digital, which is, of course, the studio behind the ultra-realistic racing sim Gran Turismo.
Oh.
They started off making what was essentially a Mario Kart clone with, like, a super cartoony look.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were two games in the Motor Tune Grand Prix series. There was Motor Tune Grand Prix and Motor Tune Grand Prix 2. And Motor Tune Grand Prix 2...
It's a mouthful.
Right? Is notable because it actually released worldwide, not just in Japan, but under the name Motor Tune Grand Prix. They dropped the 2 in Europe and North America when this game was released. But it's you know, it's a super competent kart racing game, and you can really see sort of the roots of what Polyphony Digital would end up being, because they took the gameplay pretty serious. It controls really well. So they apparently actually released this game as a in a 2-pack in Europe with the first Gran Turismo game.
Oh.
Which, that's kind of a weird combo. I can't imagine. I don't really have a lot to say about Motor Tune Grand Prix other than, you know, it was good. It controlled really well, but you wouldn't have expected anything less from those guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have here on my list a couple more licensed fare. I don't want to talk too much about any of this, but we also have Muppets Race Mania. We have My Sims Racing. We have NASCAR Kart Racing. Of course, there were those Nicktoons Racing and Nicktoons Winners Cup Racing and Nicktoons Nitro Racing, which were across all platforms in the arcades. You know, and you've probably seen that it's basically shovelware. You've probably seen it in the store.
Oh, yeah, in the, like, $9 budget area.
Yeah. There was also, you know, stuff like Star Wars Super Bombad Racing, which came out around the time of the prequel movies on PS1. It was a Star Wars kart racer where all of the Star Wars characters had big heads. You could be like Darth Maul with a big super deformed head.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, that was actually one of the better ones. It was still pretty rubbish, but, you know, Star Wars, and I was a nerd at the time. So I really want to sort of wrap this up a little bit by looking at just a handful more of these games. You know, there was also Pac-Man World Rally. There was Rayman Kart.
Oh, I wonder if X4 has things to say about that. I know.
Well, I think it was like a mobile game or something, so probably, I don't think he'd really want to say too much.
Okay.
But I seem to recall when working this episode up that you had things to say about Sonic Drift.
Yeah, just really briefly, I remember playing it on the Game Gear, and, you know, it really, I mean, this was way before Super Circuit, so the idea of playing a kart game on a handheld was very like, oh, it wasn't that super great. We only got Drift 2. I think we mentioned that in our Sonic episode a while back, but I remember playing it. It was a kart game on the go, so.
Yeah. And I want to apologize for those of you out there who really want to hear about some of these side games. I have to apologize. Our recording timer is now at 2 hours and 32 minutes. And we still have a little ways to go for our post-discussion episode.
We didn't think that we would have this much to say about kart gaming.
Really, we didn't.
I mean, we love the genre.
So let us know, man, if you want to hear about any of these games, I'd be willing to stream them or just do a Game Boy Micro episode or even do Kart Racing Part 2. I don't think there's much a need for that, but if you think there is, we love you and we'll do what you ask.
If we need to spend an entire episode on Pac-Man World Rally, then...
By Jove, we'll do it.
By Jove, we'll do it.
All right, we have two more. I want to talk real... Well, one of them is kind of to itself, but I want to talk about South Park Rally.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I kind of forget that was a game. You know, this was a PlayStation 1 release in North America and Europe, a Windows release in North America and Europe, a Nintendo 64 release in North America and Europe, a Dreamcast release in North America and Europe. I state all that because the South Park games are notorious for being unavailable on some platforms in some territories. But what South Park Rally was basically was just a South Park kart racer, you know, sort of done in the typical style of South Park. So the gameplay is kind of a mess. I seem to recall the Dreamcast version in particular reviewing really poorly.
Mm.
And, you know, it's everything you would expect in a shitty kart racer, bad controls, everything's based around like little quips and audio clips of like the South Park characters.
Stick my authority.
Exactly. Very little care given to level design.
Oh my god, you kill Kenny! You bastard!
Weapon design. Exactly. But if you like South Park, Which, you know, certainly when this game came out in 1999 and 2000, depending on your region, you know, that might have been something that appealed to you. But I really want to wrap this up by talking about what many people thought before Kart 8 came out was the new king of the karting crown.
I know what you're talking about.
I am talking about Sonic,
Sonic.
And All-Stars Racing Transformed. Well, you know, the series, because also Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing. We did not mention in this discussion, like, Sonic Riders and stuff,
yeah, but
Sonic R.
Sonic R was not a kart game.
You could probably make some argument that...
Tails Doll.
You could make an argument that it has a lot of the mechanics that we have identified as important to kart racing.
Sonic R is just a mess, though.
But, you know, basically, these are crossover games of all the Sega properties. You have stuff like, you know, Sonic and Miles, Tails Prower, Amy Rose, and, you know, we expect all that. But it also had characters like Beat from Jet Set Radio, Gilius Thunderhead from Golden Axe, Vice from Skies of Arcadia, Ooh-La-La and Pudding from Space Channel 5,
yeah.
Knights from Knights. I mean, just so much, so much, such love for all of Sega's dusty franchises that they're not using for anything anymore. These games were developed by Sumo Digital. They had just superb music by Richard Jacques, and just really great games, great visuals, real great, even like track design and stuff. You know, set not great in light of Mario Kart 8, but before Kart 8 came out, this was like the new gold standard in kart racing games. All of the power-ups were good. It had like mission modes with like really cool challenges. Really, a lot of people thought, even going into Mario Kart 8, like, man, in a world with, you know, Sonic and All-Stars Racing, do we even need a new Mario Kart?
Yeah, I mean, especially Transformed. You know, Transformed really took the Diddy Kong concept, and really, you know, polished it. The boating sequences in Transformed, in a lot of ways, feel... I mean, it's different than what Mario Kart does with their underwater things, but, I mean, it really feels like, you're on a boat.
Yeah, yeah, it feels almost like playing Hydro Thunder for a second.
In the planes, you know, it's a very different experience than just having a straight-up little hang glider segment. You're like going, I'm not really helping with all the sound effects.
Yeah, and you know, this we razz this game a lot for the inclusion of Danica Patrick as a cameo.
Yeah, I'm sorry, how can you have Danica Patrick and not Axel from Crazy Taxi? He's my favorite taxi driver.
Well, no,
sexy.
Absolutely. And you know, Sega had done several like fan like votes for like what characters should be in the game.
Like, don't get me wrong, I like BD Joe.
And the winners were pretty much always like Ryo Hazuki, Hatsune Miku, Segata Sanshiro, Vectorman, Toe Jam and Earl, Bayonetta, Rise Star. And it's like, y'all put in Danica Patrick over Bayonetta? Like, come on now. Come on, Natch!
Yeah.
But still, even though we totally bag on them for all this, it's a great game, it reviewed well. It's available on the Wii U, Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, Windows via Steam, PlayStation Vita, Nintendo 3DS, and iOS and Android. And it's a really great game. You know, we could almost do a whole Game Boy Micro on this, just this game, and do an episode focus on this game, because it's so good. Again, you know, really phenomenal track design, real love for the Sega family of franchises.
Yeah. Not a lot of love
good.
For Danica, because didn't the, some of the voiceovers in the games were like, Danica takes the lead!
Yeah, they definitely did not pronounce her name right in, like, the voiceovers and stuff, and this was something that game forums were cackling about.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, Axel. Do you think there's sexy Axel fan art?
Say that louder.
Do you think there's sexy Axel fan art? Fanfic, I got in his Crazy Taxi.
I would be shocked if there wasn't.
Man, I love Crazy Taxi. Can you imagine if there was a Crazy Taxi karting game where you're on a racetrack, but then suddenly you're like, I'm gonna go to the Taco Bell!
I need to go to the KFC.
That's my way of saying let's go to the KFC Taco Bell.
Ah! Alright, well, I think we've had it for this discussion. I think we're done. We've lapped ourselves. Unless you have anything else to add, I think it's time to get back to the rest of our show so we can wrap up and go get some food.
Let's do it.
Alright, well then, it's time for...
Rumor has it.
Our first rumor this week is Atlus has posted a new teaser site. We don't know what it's for yet. All this teaser site has right now is a picture of a giant tree and a humorous title that reads, "This is not broccoli, hashtag Atlus."
Ah!
The keywords for the site are Atlus, written in katakana, broccoli, written in katakana, regular broccoli in English, and Atlus in English.
It's broccoli.
There's also a handful of images on the teaser site that they were found by sort of combing through the source, and that is a 2, a D, an X, and the word coming soon.
With 2 M's in coming. Coming soon.
Oh, there are 2 M's in coming. Wow.
Oh.
Whoa.
An O still.
They also ripped the asset of this huge, huge, huge tree. This looks like a sequel to the remake of Etrian Odyssey, which I think they called it like Etrian Odyssey Untold Millennial Girl or something.
Yeah.
This looks probably like a remake of Etrian Odyssey 2 in that style.
Etrian Odyssey 2 DX, director's cut.
Well, yeah, almost certainly, in fact. These Etrian Odyssey games are all about trees and stuff, but Etrian Odyssey 2 in particular is about climbing a giant tree.
Oh.
So this, to me, really, that seems like a slam dunk, and I'm pretty sure that's what's going to get announced out of this.
That's exciting news. You know, the Etrian Odyssey series really kind of gaining in popularity, and I think the people who play Persona Q, I almost said Persona X, the people who play Persona Q are really going to kind of jump into this style of gameplay.
Excellent. Do you want to take this next rumor?
Yes. Game Informer talked to Eiji Onuma-san, and he has been stating that the next Legend of Zelda game is not necessarily going to be a strictly single-player experience.
And the rumor, of course, isn't that he said that. It's a fact that he said that. The rumor is that, you know, from this, we're looking at a multiplayer Zelda.
Oh, that would be so great. Could you imagine if one person was being, I guess you wouldn't really have it, always have a Navi, but the Navi type character and being like, "Hey, watch out."
Man,
hey.
I would troll you so hard. I would just always be like,
hey, listen.
Like the Midna or whatever though. How cool would that be? Like, watch out. And then you got a little, and I did a little ping. And I did a little ping on the gamepad and you're like,
Okay. You just showed me how annoying that is. I'm not going to do that anymore either. Let's both agree to leave that one in the past.
Ha!
A link to the past.
Ah!
All right, well, with that having been said, it's time for our still unnamed segment. I'm not going to have, like, a cute bumper for you guys this week. I just really want to point out this amazing article over on US Gamer called Saving Suda51.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, this is basically an article. It's by Kat Bailey. It's half article and like half interview where she basically talks about sort of the highs and lows of Suda Goichi's career and why with Let It Die, previously Lily Bergamo, we might well be seeing Suda finally back in like his prime game making
space.
Yeah,
the thing I really took away from it was how the Gung Ho partnership has really, he really feels like he's flourishing under it. And that's great news.
Yeah, well, you know, he basically states here that before the partnership with Gung Ho, he had to spend most of his time doing organizational and administrative tasks at Grasshopper Manufacturer, and now he can finally focus back on game design, which is where he wants to be.
That's right. If
this is true, then this Gung Ho thing, which, you know, we had expressed some concern about when it happened last year, this will be basically a godsend for Grasshopper and fans of those left-of-center games that Grasshopper makes, because I think Suda, when he can make the game he wants to make, I think he's a great, talented voice in games design and games production, but a lot of the recent projects that Grasshopper has shipped, they feel kind of half-baked, and I wonder if this isn't, if this kind of really explains exactly
why.
Yeah,
you know, Lollipop Chainsaw, Killer is Dead, both kind of bombed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So.
And Shadow of the Damned was that a Grasshopper game specifically, or did he just partner with it?
I believe it's a Grasshopper game. It definitely feels like a Grasshopper game. So either way, I don't want to stick too long on
this.
It
was Grasshopper.
This article will link you over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Is absolutely worth reading. Once again, you know, our hats off to US Gamer. Some other sites are, like, cutting down their, like, editorial staff for these kinds of articles and pieces. And I think that's a huge mistake. This, is to me, is the stuff that makes games journalism still relevant, even in this world of Nintendo streaming directly to you.
Yes.
So with that having been said...
Can I just say, based on the direct, one of the posts about Iwata-san's surgery, it was really cute. Someone said, I'm wishing you a speedy recovery directly to you.
All right, well, with all this having been said, let's find out...
I said, hey, what's going on?
So this week, I played a very special game.
I played a little bit of it too. Can I do mine first and then let you jump in?
Let me give background, fool. About a year and a half ago, we talked about a Kickstarter I was very passionate about.
You got caught up in the Kickstarter.
I got caught up in the Kickstarter!
Whoa.
And so, you know, this Kickstarter came along. Shovel Knight is the game we're talking about. You know, it looked really amazing, like this NES-inspired Castlevania, Mega Man-like inspired, just amazing platformer. You know, this game, after some additional delays that we weren't expecting, finally came out this week, and it's basically what all of the gamers on the internet are talking about right now. Slackkick, if you want to start talking about the game itself, this is your time.
It's just a really, like, one thing that I've seen people say in reviews that's a common thread is that it doesn't feel like it's just a retro throwback. It feels like it could have been a classic game, and I specifically feel like it could have been, like, a classic Capcom game. It really feels like it's, you know, very authentic to the type of exploration and platforming back in those days. And, you know, I'll let you talk more in depth about it, but it also kind of incorporates elements of modern game design to make it a little less grindy in some ways. But, you know, like, just loading it up, like, obviously the aesthetic is pure vintage. It feels so weird to say vintage, but... It really is. And I mean, just a true labor of love. The music done largely by Jake Vert Kaufman.
Yeah, it's amazing. The presentation is spot on. It is NES down to its very bones. They made very, very few like modern concessions. And some of the stuff is for the better. Like there's no sprite flicker. They added four colors that the NES color palette wasn't capable of using. Literally only four.
But I felt like they didn't do anything too crazy with, like, parallax scrolling or anything.
Oh, no. It's very much in keeping with sort of the capabilities of the NES. Like, it's ridiculously, like, true to form. To the point that, you know, some people honestly thought they could burn the game onto an NES cart and play it and were, like, contacting Yacht Club Games about, like, why isn't this working? And Yacht Club had to be like, I appreciate that, but... It's not an NES game.
Aww.
And they ended up on Gamma Sutra doing like a whole post about, you know, this is why this isn't an NES game. Like why we didn't just send out a ROM or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, when you really look at the ways that it is like an NES game, it's really remarkable. It's really impressive. And you know, like you say, the game design, the gameplay, the game flow, it feels like a combination of like Castlevania, Mega Man, and DuckTales.
Yeah.
It really does feel like one of the old Capcom classics.
Like, if I didn't know better, you're like, hey, did you ever play that old Capcom gem, Shovel Knight? Yacht Club Games just did a report of it for the Virtual Console. I would have been like, oh, okay, oh, that's really good.
But yeah, I mean,
obviously I'm not ignorant like that.
It's true to form enough that if you didn't exactly know to look in, like, the right spot, you would probably be fooled.
Yeah.
So it's a really incredible experience. I finished it today. So I can say for sure from start to finish, it is pure quality. It's right this very moment in competition for my game of the year. And wow. We're at the halfway yeah. mark of the year, so it's safe to start talking about that.
We've already got such a good game of the year list.
Yeah, like Kart 8, Bravely Default, Shovel Knight. It's been an incredible fucking year for games, man.
We might have just to do a combined top 10 this year.
Girl, we're on air. We ain't got to talk about all that right now.
Just saying the unanimous gems.
Did you play anything else this week?
I did. I played a little bit of NES Remix 1 and 2.
Oh, what did you think about those?
They're clever. I also played a little bit of Super Luigi Brothers, and that was a mindfuck. Like, just going in, and I was like, okay, because, you know, I understood the concept of it, and for those who aren't familiar, Super Luigi Brothers is unlockable. Well, I mean, it's already unlocked from the start if you have both NES Remix 1 and 2. So if you own both of them, you can play Super Luigi Brothers, which is you playing as Luigi, and, I mean, I didn't do the two-player mode, but are both players Luigi?
I don't know, I haven't played two-player mode.
Or is player 2 Mario?
I haven't played two-player mode.
But anyways, it's basically mirror mode Mario. Like, Super Mario Brothers, mirror mode. Which means that you're platforming right to left. And it messes with you, you know, like, I could go through World 1-1 without issue, but for some reason, playing it in a way that you're not traditionally meant to play it is bizarre as hell.
Well, and that makes it perfect in that sort of vein of remixing, because the whole point of NES Remix is to sort of show you games from different angles and break down sort of the, like, individual parts of, like, every action of a game.
Look at the game design.
And that happens
with Mario.
Luigi Bros. Too. When you play Luigi Bros., it's like, just playing it mirrored, you take a whole new appreciation because your muscle memory is stripped from,
like
what you're doing.
I feel like Nintendo's trying to teach us about game design.
Hey, man, between Mario Maker and, again, you know, the NES Remix, I've been basically saying that Nintendo's trying to teach us game design for the last, like, year. Like, I have felt that way, and I continue to feel that way.
Oh, man, I know a lot of people want Zelda Maker.
You're not speaking loud enough for the mic to be here.
I know a lot of people want Zelda Maker, but I'm not going to say much about that because you're going to be like, ugh.
Yeah, people can just make shitty dungeons.
Could you imagine, let's say, Metroid Maker?
That'd be cool. I mean, my problem is Mario is so straightforward that there's a lot to be gained from, like, learning that kind of level design. The massive scope of world design and, like, multi-maps interconnected design that you would need for a Metroid Maker or a Zelda Maker, I feel like that wouldn't work nearly as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, they could prove me wrong. I'd be okay with that. A great experience is a great experience.
Yeah, you know, Nintendo's really trying to raise a generation of ludologists.
Yeah, so, alright, well, you know, we're getting a little slappy here. It is time to start wrapping things up. Why don't we go over our social links?
We will. I'm going to start over on Facebook today, because that's where the bulk of our feedback was. Our social links question of the week was, tonight we're talking about kart racers. Do you have a favorite? And thank you, by the way, for those of you who responded in such short notice. You know, we didn't get a chance to put up our social links as soon as we usually do.
Yeah, this has been a weird weekend. But hey, Pride!
Woo! Woo! Our Facebook bonus question was, is there an underappreciated kart racer that you feel has never gotten its due? Tell us about it. All right, first up
Did you read our main question of the week?
I did.
Okay.
Tonight we're talking about kart racers. Do you have a favorite? Colin M. said, Diddy Kong Racing on the N64 was what I cut my kart racing teeth on.
Yes.
Crash Team Racing on the PSX was also pretty fun. Yeah, so I mean, like, I definitely agree. Two of the kart clones, so to speak, that really did the job as well as Mario Kart. Ian O. from the Koopa Club podcast said, Snowboard Kids for the underappreciated, and of course Mario Kart 64 / MK8 for my favorite. Does Snowboard Kids count? It's sort of a kart racer, but snowboards, lol.
So I actually wanted to comment on this. When I saw your comment, we were just about to record this episode, Ian, and I chose not to add Snowboard Kids to the show notes, even though that absolutely fits in the purview of what we were discussing today. I just wanted to credit you for pointing that one out, because that is such an amazing, underappreciated gem of a kart-style racing game. There was a DS remake.
SVK!
Yes. And, you know, it's an incredible game. All of the track designs are so good. In fact, when I play Mount Wario, even still, I think of Snowboard Kids and how much
I miss Snowboard Kids.
Because that is a very Snowboard Kids style track design with the tree obstacle area, doing sort of three different, almost like, parts of the lap where, you know, they're not necessarily doing laps, but it's like, oh, this phase of the track.
Which is kind of an anomaly for the, For the Mario Kart series.
For the kart series, yeah.
There's a couple who are
for
like that.
Snowboard kids, that was a little bit more the norm.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, it was just a great game. Ian, you're absolutely right. Both Snowboard Kids and Snowboard Kids 2, incredible games, totally underappreciated. And frankly, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Renee A., from the Killer Queens from Outer Space podcast says, girl, you're forgetting Sonic R. I mean, can't you feel the sunshine? Oh, girl. And you know, it's funny. We also were talking about Sonic R, you know, a little bit in this episode, but, you know, Sonic R in a lot of ways did take some elements from kart racing, but it's also kind of a mess. Sorry. I mean, sorry. I don't need to rain on your sunshine, Renee, but. You know, I think it was a little bit sloppy, but, you know, it brought us Tails Doll. Tails Doll and, you know, now up there with Sonic EXE is one of the favorite creepypastas. So, Jeremy J. from the Koopa Club podcast got a little thread going. He said, anyone who doesn't say Mario Kart 8 is wrong and should be punished. You replied with a frowny face. Why is that?
Because I don't want to be punished.
You don't think Mario Kart... Mario R. said, yo, Mario Kart, I'm very happy for you and I'm going to let you finish, but Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformers is one of the best kart racers of all time. Throwing a little Kanye in there. And then Colin M. said, Jeremy, I figured Mario Kart 8 was implied. The Mario Kart series has always been the best kart racer out there.
I see. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of these responses are exactly sort of what I was expecting, you know, because these really do sort of match what we were talking about, how this is basically how the games community views these games.
Yeah. Renee A. from Killer Queens from Outer Space also gave a proper response, aside from talking about Sonic R. He said, I've been a fan of Mario Kart since the first entry on the SNES, and it's my favorite kart racer series, but it's Mario Kart 64 that takes the top spot. First to introduce the power slide and four-player action and the dreaded blue shell. Andy W. said, I've personally never been a fan of kart racing games, but I had a brief love affair with Chocobo Racing. I would love to see an updated installment of that one.
And, you know, it's funny you say that because Square Enix, had announced a 3DS sequel back at the launch announcement, or I'm sorry, at the announcement E3 of the 3DS. They had very specifically announced a Chocobo Racing 3D. Unfortunately, that project was canceled, but it, at least, you know, Square Enix, they're still aware of it, and they still, you know, at least in theory, intend to come back to it someday.
Yeah. Last but certainly not least, over on Facebook, is my future husband, Daniel T.
Oh, girl.
Who said, I never owned it, but I really enjoyed Diddy Kong Racing when I would rent it. The adventure mode was very innovative at the time, and I really enjoyed the appearance of similar modes in games such as Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. As far as games I've actually had the most fun with, that's probably Mario Kart 8. Even though it's brand new, it's the game I've played most with other people. And I've had some pretty crazy races already. As far as games that need more exposure, Chocobo Racing. I only ever played a demo, but that game is very well themed, and I'm a sucker for Final Fantasy hodgepodge nostalgia trips. Indeed. You know, Daniel, let's put on some Diddy Kong Racing, load up our Bewitched and Billy pop mix, and go to town. On the kart games, I mean. On the kart games.
Girl, you thirsty. I know it's hot, but damn.
All right. Over on our Twitter, we got a few responses. Chitao16 said, there's more than just Mario Kart. And I'm not teasing or anything. I mean, he might have been teasing, but he might have not been too familiar with other ones. So either, if you were teasing, if you weren't teasing, then hopefully you learned some stuff. LimeBlue3 over on Twitter said, Mario Kart 64 and Mario Kart 8. Diddy Kong Racing has a special place in my heart too. And Rider Blaze over on Twitter said, Crash Team Racing by far had a ton of 1P as well as multi-content. Felt less cheaty than DKR. Mario Kart DS in second. Very interesting.
Yeah, you know, but again, you know, that tracks what I was saying earlier. And I actually absolutely agreed that, you know, both Crash Team Racing and Diddy Kong Racing had just a ton of, like, different, like, modes and, like, adventure mode. We gonna explore, we gonna fight some bosses. So I'm not that surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
That's very neat.
Alright, in terms of general shoutouts on Twitter, let's see, we got Slagkick, who said, just lost about a half hour of work on the GameBuie.org episode 56 post because of a poop emoji.
Are you reading your own shit?
Oh, wait, I shouldn't read my own post.
Girl.
That is a thing that actually happened. Renee Egg, also known as Clerical Errors on Twitter, said, no! It's all fine, the episode's up, you hopefully heard it. Koopa Club gave us a shout-out, said, in case you missed it, I-C-E-Y-M-I. Episode 52 of the Koopa Club podcast is available now, featuring guests from GameBooey.org and OLR. So, yeah, definitely check that out. It was a lot of fun to be on Koopa Club with my boys and my boo, Rob Roberts.
It was a lot of fun to listen to, too.
Kuradatacho, my French is horrible, over on Twitter, included us in a post from Four Loko's Twitter saying, Afties with the Bay, and it's four pictures of a Four Loko can. Is that your way of saying that we need to do some gaming with Four Loko?
I didn't do that.
No, I'm asking, it's our friend Dominique who did,
Yeah, no, I mean, I know
the
who
report
it
card.
Is.
No, I know.
It just sounded like you were expecting a response.
Oh, no, I was asking.
Like,
well,
you appreciate that radio is one way,
I'm expecting
right?
a response from her on the next episode.
Okay, fair enough.
And last but certainly not least is Game Buoy Superfan, part of the Game Buoy Power Couple Superfans, Crystal Y. Diaz. And she said, fun fact, I can't go onto my Twitter now without hearing in my head, we fucking love Twitter.
Well, it's true. We do fucking love Twitter.
We do. We fucking love Twitter. And we love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. And as Crystal YD has said, we fucking love Twitter.
We fucking love Twitter.
If you're in the dark seedy hills of Tumblr, you can tumble with us at gamebuoy.tumblr.com. You can plus one us at plus.google.com/+GameBuoyOrg, I think. You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And as ever and always, our home base with all our social links, our complete episode archive,
over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. That's GameBuoy.org. And as ever and always, we have, like I said, complete episode archive, and every post has links so that you can play along at home.
Speaking of
You can also play on the go with the GameBuoy.org mobile optimized site.
You know what I'd like to do ever and always is shout out to our fabulous friends over at Koopa Club. Koopa Club is an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. That's Koopa with a Q, Club with a K. As well as that, I always, always, always like to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. I'd also be remiss not to mention the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore, and Orange Lounge Radio, OLRs, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd also like to shout out to our own show, currently on hiatus, talking about RuPaul's Drag Race.
Gentlemen!
Start your engines.
Oh my god, can you imagine a drag race kart racer?
Man, it upsets me that there isn't one.
Come on, Natch! Come on, Natch!
Oh, man. That is, of course, Reading is Fundamental. We're on that show along with Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and Delvin from VG Realness. In non-gaming links, I'd also like to point out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, and X-Nation over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants.
Take us to a game bar.
I want to take you to a game bar!
As everyone always, I'd like to start my shout-outs with Game Bar. That's game with a gay in it. Actually, with two and usually three gays on most days.
Ooh, girl.
That's the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. Basically, the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch. As everyone always, I'd like to shout out to our friends over at the Nerdgasm Network, the wildest shock shock video game radio that you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com, you can hear, along with OLR, two fantastic shows about online gaming. The first one being Girls Gone WoW, starring Syl and Friends, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO that I just resubscribed to. My subscription lapsed. Oops. After like a month of playing again. So I've definitely been keeping up on all the exciting upcoming Warlords of Draenor stuff and all that with my friends at Girls Gone WoW and Horde House, the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. And like I said, you can check those out on the Voice of Geeks Network and participate live.
Oh, excellent.
I'd like to shout out, last but certainly not least, to La Palanca Podcast. That's the podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. I'm really trying to work on my Spanish. And actually, La Palanca Podcast kind of helps me out.
Excellent.
Although I'm just like, ooh, listening to those sexy accents.
Girl, come on, let's not be objectifying our fellow podcast sisters.
They're both handsome men with very great voices for radio, and, you know, not just, it's not like a face for radio thing.
Just keep digging that hole, girl.
As ever and always. I'm saying as ever and always a lot tonight.
Stealing it from me, you nast.
Our wonderful theme music, you call me a nast?
Keep going.
Our wonderful theme music was done by the late great Zelda reorchestrated. The late great Zelda reorchestrated, which was a project that aimed to reorchestrate the classic sounds of Zelda and beautiful symphonic realness. And as ever and always, we need to sign out. So as ever and always, Captain Spike.
As ever and always, I want to thank you all out there in Internet Radio for your time. It has been a lovely, lovely, lovely experience to be speaking to you today. I hope you've enjoyed it even half as much as I've enjoyed talking to you guys. We have a few really cool episodes coming up in the pipeline. We're going to take a look at some titles that sort of throw back to the yesteryear of gaming by design.
Indeed we do.
We're going to take a look at the Gamer X convention.
That's Gamer X 2, not Gamer X Tube.
And I would expect something Nintendo-centric in our upcoming 64th episode.
Oh, maybe so.
So, look forward to that. I hope that you'll join us again some other sunny Sunday afternoon. It has been a real joy to be with you today. Psychic, do you have any final thoughts?
Thank you for racing.
With that having been said, thank you for your time. Keep gaming, keep thinking, and until next time, Mach, go, go, go!
Social Links question of the week. Tonight, we're talking about kart racers. Do you have a favorite? Facebook boner question. Is there an underappreciated fart racer that you feel has never gotten its poo? Tell us about it.
Downloadable content. This downloadable content. Oh, yeah, no, content was the right word. With so much content, we also have news that Bandai Namco, bitch, don't tell me to start over. I'm keeping this all in. Bandai Namco has the license to Godzilla.
That whole conversation makes so much more sense now when you were like, for some reason a lot of people are talking about chocobo racing. I was like, why wouldn't they be? It was literally like meant to be a response to Mario Kart. Like, why wouldn't they?
The next one I want to talk about is Konami's Wacky Racers, which was also released in certain regions as... Oh, I got that wrong. That was my note wrong. Do the bad R word to people.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's Pyramid Head, dog. Pyramid Head is not a good guy.
Yeah, a lot of people like to do sexy cosplay of him.
Yeah, well, people have some really messed up priorities.
Oh, hold on. We just got a notification. GameBuoy's post, Social Links Question of the Week, is performing better than 80% of other posts on that page. Promote it to get even better results.
Fuck you, Facebook. Also, thank you to everyone who follows us.
Hearts.